First entering service in February of 1968, the Boeing 737 is a jetliner with a long and storied history. Storied because of its many iterations and some controversy, and long because it's a jet plane and the fuselage is long. Duh. The original 100 and 200 models could seat up to 130 passengers. In 1980, that glorious year, Boeing launched the 737 Classic line because the new 737 was universally rejected by consumers. It didn't taste as good. You see what I did there? I made a jape. The Classic line had models 300, 400, and 500 and could seat up to 168 terrified souls. Not to be outdone, in 1997 it saw the introduction of the 737 Next Generation, with the 600, 700, 800, and 900 variants coming into play with larger wings, an upgraded glass cockpit, and could seat up to 215 passengers. In a surprise move, 2017 saw the Boeing 737 MAX enter service with variants 7, 8, 9, and 10, with a maximum capacity of 204 people. The surprise being that they didn't go with 737 Deep Space Nine or 737 Voyager. This was an obvious name after the next generation model, and clearly a missed opportunity. The 737 was the highest-selling commercial aircraft of all time up until 2019, when the Airbus A320 family of craft surpassed it by taking advantage of massive European Union subsidies, shady marketing tactics, and by virtue of being French. God. Controversy followed tragedy when two 737 MAX jets experienced fatal crashes, and the entire line was grounded between March of 2019 and November of 2020 in the United States, longer in some jurisdictions, after the FAA approved a request to remove references to a new maneuvering characteristics augmentation system, say that 10 times fast, an automatic corrective system developed to compensate for higher than acceptable nose angle during certain maneuvers, from the flight manual. Boeing apparently avoided revealing that the thing actually existed and instructed pilots to take manual corrective action in case of a malfunction until after the Lion Air crash in November of 2018. In December of 2018, the FAA predicted that the MCAS could cause 15 crashes over 30 years, which is wildly unacceptable. In the case of both crashes, Boeing finally confirmed that the MCAS had activated following investigations. They were caught with their hands in the proverbial cookie jar. The fleet of MAX jets was returned to service in the United States in December of 2020 and January of 2021 in Europe and Canada, just in time to not have any passengers to fly in them because apparently wearing a piece of fabric over the face during a global pandemic is a violation of human rights and a war crime or some such nonsense and infringement of freedoms and constitutional blabber. Boeing was fined over $20 billion and incurred indirect losses in the neighborhood of $60 billion from the 1,200 canceled orders, which is nothing compared to the number of lives lost, because they were, in this instance, preposterously stupid. Hopefully a lesson can be learned from all that ridiculousness and a more thorough transparency could be required. Having said all that, the MAX line of 737 is now completely corrected and perfectly safe for all passengers. Assuming you are vaccinated or have recent negative testing, go out, book a flight, and for the love of all that is holy, go somewhere, because cabin fever is killing all of us, and you're really being quite a diva lately.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is the countdown to the end of the year, and we've got a bunch of big episodes lined up. Oh, who's crying?
I am. It's almost over.
Oh, shut up. It's a joyous time. You get to get the hell away from us. But it is a party cast. Tim is here. Brooke is here. Purnell is here. Chris is here. How is everyone doing?
I need a nap. I need a real nap.
Yeah, I actually literally like kind of dozed off for a half hour right before the show.
Same. Should be the SML nap cast.
No time for that. No time for that, because we have a guest joining us. Yes, joining this massive craziness party cast, Will Brierley of SnowRunner Productions. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me.
It is good to have you. It's actually good to have you back. You were on our show many a year ago to talk about a little indie called Soda Drinker Pro, and now you are here to talk about another little indie that is kind of unique.
Yeah.
Retired Men's Nude Beach Volleyball League. Well, for the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Yeah, so it's, you know, kind of a popular genre these days is a narrative beach volleyball game. and it takes place, you know, in the kind of later years in life, and very kind of introspective game about, you know, life and challenges and you know, all the fun stuff that happens. And playing volleyball, of course.
Oh, of naked. Course. Naked, yes. Volleyball. Well,
exactly.
The ref isn't completely naked.
You know, I was watching a stream the other night, and someone came up with a good theory that it's actually body paint. And I accept that as the...
That works.
I was just the lower. I was just going to say that he's naked where it counts.
That's what I was going to say. True. Yeah.
There's, you know, emotional... and, you know, you can be, like, emotionally naked, but can you be emotionally nude? You know? I don't know.
Oh, maybe with the help of this game.
Exactly.
We're getting to the deep questions. Actually, I want to start off with the first question. This is a little bit of a throwback. The very first question I asked you in our first interview, I'm going to repeat in this interview. What the fuck did I just play?
Yeah, you know, this is it's a different one. It could be the prequel to Soda Drinker, or maybe it's the sequel to it. It does sit in the same world as it, so that is
the Soda Drinker cinematic universe.
Yes,
skinematic universe.
Exactly.
Are you naked in the freaking soda game too?
You might be. I mean, you never see the player. You might be.
Let's just say there's a hamper and a hanker for disrobing.
Exactly. That's actually, you know, and actually I got to check, because so that I don't want to spoil how the games are connected, but they are absolutely connected. So if someone finds out how they are, then, you know,
wow.
They're all the games have some sort of, like, even, you know, I put out another one, part of the Dread X collection, last year, called Rot Gut, and there's those are connected, and then another one called Find the Letter H, which is definitely connected, but yeah, so they're all kind of all part of a same world, which, you know, a lot of it is just being like, oh, this is, I kind of like making this, you know, little stories that connect all the things.
Well, what would you say, what would be the sizzle that you would give to somebody that's like, hey, this is an titled game to see on the store?
Yeah, I would say if you like a game with a, you know, a nice story, and this was, you know, I made this as a collaboration with Aaron Blair, too, who's a crazy good writer. Like, he also if you ever seen the Clueless Gamer segments on Conan, he does all those, and he wrote there's a short film called How to Lose Weight in 12 Easy Steps, and it's really good. And it's like, if you haven't
Is that the thing where the guy's like, where he's like, where he's worked at the furniture store and all that?
Yep, Yeah.
Holy shit, that's amazing. Yes.
Yeah. So he did you know, most of the writing in it, and he's just crazy good. So, like, and he's super funny and nice to work with. So, and then Rachel Olson, she's a wonderful artist who did amazing work in it, too. So it was a really fun, you know, project to all work together on. So
How did you all get together on this project?
You know, I met Rachel, because we worked together. She did some work on the before the pandemic. I was doing a show that was powered by an AI bot that I wrote called Deep Learning with Meryl Gramble. So it was like a off-Broadway show in New York. And she did some of the art for that. And, you know, we'd worked together on some stuff. And then I met Aaron, actually, at PAX, like, maybe it was actually my last Uber ride. Like, I haven't been in a Uber since then. It was at PAX East. we were like right next to each other. He was doing his show called this cool kind of like game show panel. And then I was doing my Meryl show, and we just kind of were like, oh, we've kind of like been in the same world, you know, a bunch, and you know, just got in touch, and we're like, hey. And then we just kept in touch after PAX, because we just like got along, and we're like, let's do something. And
PAX is just a great place to meet people in general, I think. Oh, when it's not hyper crowded, at least, because it has its moments.
Yeah, oh my god, that was such a, you know, a really weird PAX, because it was like, it was before everything like really shut down. I mean, maybe like
that must have been like later. Right before everything shut down.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So everyone was like super scared, including myself. And it was like, you know, I would normally spend the whole weekend there and just hang out and, you know, go nuts and check out everything. And this one, I like took an Uber in, did the show, and like left pretty much immediately after. And it was such a bummer, because like I love seeing everyone and, you know, saying hi. And it was a nice way to end it, because like I've barely been to any sort of like shows or done anything since, but it was like, you know, it was at least I get to do that one. You know, it was like
in normal circumstances you would have done a lot more stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean, that was like my plan. I had a ton of shows. The next week I had a show I was doing with actually I had the mentalist. You remember Kreskin? He's like this.
Yes.
Yeah. Like the amazing Kreskin?
Yeah, the amazing, yes. Kreskin was going to be on Meryl, along with, it was a really cool lineup. One of the guys from, I think, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And so that got canceled the next week. And then I had a ton of other shows lined up. And it was just like, you know, going to New York all the time to do them, and then they all went away. So it's like, oh no. And but I mean, you know, way worse things happened than me losing a show. But it was but yeah, it was, you know, so from there, just, you know, Aaron and I kept in touch, and we and it was really wonderful, humble bundle, you know, they backed the game, so they were like, you know, basically paid for us to make it, and was a part of the Humble Trove and Humble Choice. And
how did you explain the game to Humble, and like, what did you say for them to be like, yeah, here's a check, do it?
Yeah. You know, I was sitting in a diner in Watertown, Massachusetts. And, you know, I kind of was just like rattling off game ideas, and it actually, you know, came through my friend, Ichiro, who, he made the game and like Elegy for a Dead World. And
wait, that's the name of the game. It's
Oh, that's it's awesome. An awesome game. There's a new version coming out.
It's called Ooh.
Yeah, it's like, it's really, really good. It's like, seriously, A-H-H-H-H-H-H-H, like.
I'm hoping for the sequel.
He's got awesome names. Like, he made the game Drunken Robot Pornography, Monster Loves You.
I reviewed Monster Loves You.
That's a good game. Yeah, it's awesome.
This is how you sell games to people. Like, I swear, like, we do so many reviews on this show, and there's been more than a few times where I've ripped on titles like, oh, here we go, Monster Fight Simulator, or here we go, Quest to Save Ridiculon. I don't know. And then you got fucking aye. Like, there we go. There's some freshness.
Yeah, you gotta have a, you know, neat titles are, you know, catch eye catching and stuff. And I think, yeah, I didn't expect them to pick that one because I gave them a bunch of possible stuff and they were interested in either that or Find the Letter H. And I made Find the Letter H, but that's a very, like, it's not meant to be a big game at all. Like, it's basically like almost a meditation tool, but it's, you know, it's kind of, it does what it's supposed to do, but it's not at all like meant to do a lot. It's like all you do in the game is find the letter H, and that's it. And so, like, it's
I'm in.
But it's
okay. I know this sounds great.
Yeah, it's like a relaxing, quiet game where basically you're walking around a pond and this guy is talking to you and he's just saying nice stuff to you the whole time.
Oh my god.
Like, yeah. And like all you have to do is you see these letters and whenever you see the H you have to click on it. And that's it. And then like eventually you see more and more letters and the more, you know, it basically forces your mind to like open up your peripheral vision so that way, and you have to be relaxed to play it because it's like, it's the only way you can see it, the H, when you see a ton of letters on screen. And then at the same time, this guy's just saying nice stuff to you. So it's like your body's open to receiving this information. And that's like the whole purpose of the game.
I have not played this game yet. And I'm already like fantasizing about this game. It's like walking around the game. You're like, you're really good at that.
And it's like sometimes
for being here, you're swell.
Yeah. It's all like sometimes it'll be like, you have nice elbows.
No one's ever said that to me. I take such good care of them.
Yeah. It's like, you know, and I pitched mostly those two games, and then they were like, you know, we want the volleyball one. And I was like, really? I'm impressed. I mean, they do awesome stuff anyway. Like, they've put out so many cool games. But I mean, that's like kind of a risky title. And I was, the whole time, I was just so scared that they'd be like, we want to change it, you know, like, or we, but they never did. You know, they were just like, we want to do this. And it was like, and it went through a zillion iterations. It took way longer than I thought. And I was working on it by myself for a long time before Aaron and Rachel and I started working on it. And without them, probably would have never come out because, like, it's just, you know, I had an idea what I wanted it to be like, but it, you know, their ideas and input were so helpful and added so much to it. So it's really
cool. How did the project change once they came in?
Yeah, you know, like, originally it was, I actually, and there's a bunch of these sprites are in the game. You can like unlock them, but there's like a rotoscoped version of, it was almost like, what's that game? Where like, it's like a silhouettes and you're kind of jousting and there's a worm.
Nidhogg.
Almost kind of looked like that at first. And it was still going to be heavily dialogue based, but, you know, I just couldn't get the look right. And then at one point it was going to be more just like a straight up visual novel. And, you know, I was like, oh, there's too many of those. Well, there's not too many of them. I just like, if I'm going to do it, like, I don't think I can do it as good as those. So it was like, I want it to be its own.
Then you're stepping into a different realm.
Exactly. Like, I can't be like, you know, I can't do justice to the really good ones out there. So I want to just, you know, it was like, and eventually we kept on playing with it and, you know, Aaron and I would just brainstorm, you know, a lot and just be like, all right, what are, and I would say 90% of the game is all based on like real stories, of like people that we know or stories in life. So it's like all based on like actual stuff. And, you know, it's like without like, you know, we kind of changed enough of it that is, you know,
protects the innocent.
Exactly. Yeah. the most real part is the nude volleyball part. But,
but like, these are based on actual nude bodies.
Yeah. And there's like, I mean, the game takes place in Massachusetts, which is, you know, where I live. And I didn't realize until like maybe a month before the game came out on Humble, that volleyball was actually invented in Holyoke, Massachusetts.
Learning shit on this show.
Exactly. Like not too far from where basketball was invented. And it's, you know, even before video games, they're making games here. It's like, but I was going to do, and maybe I'll do, I don't know. I probably don't have time to do it this week, but I'll do something in Holyoke and, you know, pay some respect for the people who got us here. Yeah. In the volleyball world.
People who died to invent volleyball.
Exactly.
People who laid their lives on the line to make sure we could play volleyball today. Exactly. Brooke, I know you put a lot of time into this game. You've been raving about it. What are your thoughts on this? Like, what do you have to say to the person responsible for what you've been going through?
Oh, gosh. Well, I was actually a little nervous when I heard the dev was going to be joining us here today. So super awesome to meet you. Like, Chris could tell you, Chris knows me better than the other guys on the show. As soon as I started playing this game, I loved it. It's very exciting for me to maybe go on the record being like the first person to say that this game reminds me of Doki Doki Literature Club and Toe Jam and Earl at the same time.
Whoa.
And those are two of my favorite games. Like Chris has stop talking about Doki Doki Literature Club, stop talking about Toe Jam and Earl. Like I never shut up, and I thought it was so, it was such a breath of fresh air. I'm a huge dating game and visual novel nerd, and anybody who's played this game and visual novels could tell you that this game's more socially interactive than your average visual novel in a lot of real ways. It's just really neat.
Thank you.
I couldn't get it to work Friday night, and I was joking around with Joe. I didn't expect this game to be what it is, first of all, and I didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did. So I was messaging Joe. I was like, man, I don't even know what my Friday night's going to be like now without these retired men's volleyball dudes. And he was like, you should play a Soda Drinker Pro then. And I thought he was just kidding. And about 24 hours later, I'd done a little reading, and I realized Joe had been trying to throw me a bone. And let me just say, I immediately went and bought Soda Drinker Pro just to throw some money. I just had such a good time, and I thought maybe I'd have time to play some Soda Drinker Pro before tonight, but I didn't. But I just, you know, it's so exciting to hear that both games are in the same universe, because this is a really cool universe for me. This is right up my alley.
Oh, thanks so much. That's awesome. Wow. And that's like the nicest comparison ever. I love, you know, Toe Jam and Earl and Doki Doki. So that's awesome. So,
those games rule. And I mean, it's not like it's mechanically exactly like either of those games, but the influences are there without ripping either one off. Like it's just, even the font, like from the first 15 seconds of the game and the font that the ref's talking in, it was like, oh man, this is taking me back to when I was a kid with some Toe Jam. It's awesome.
I love the Toe Jam and Earl. Like the fonts and like those kind of like moving backgrounds, and the whole vibe of that game is really cool. Like it's such a...
I like the sound, the digitized sound effect on all the voice clips in the game.
Yeah.
Could y'all play Papers, Please? That really reminded me of the effects they used in that one.
That was all I do is just, and Papers, Please is awesome too. That's crazy good.
Great.
It's like one of those games that like I can play it, but it also bums me out so bad. Like,
yeah,
it's just like, I'm like, oh, like, but I love a game that can do that. Like that can like make you feel an experience. And I think like when you're doing things interactively, like it sets you up for a different type of like learning and things. And that's a great example of a game that does some powerful stuff. And, but yeah, when I was doing all like the ref stuff, it's just like short term up, you know, and so I would like muffle it in my own voice or like, and then I just put it through some distortion. And that was so fun. Like I did all the music in it, and it was cool. I actually, you know, my main instrument is guitar. And so I hadn't done a lot of like, you know, kind of MIDI composing type stuff. And it was like really fun. I got to use like a lot of music theory and stuff that I learned in college to be like, oh, this is, you know, what I want to have happen here and stuff. And it was cool.
Now, I know there's going to be a lot of people who listen to this interview without really checking out the game, and they're going to be really confused when they hear that we're talking about a volleyball game, but it's on the level of, like, Doki Doki Literature Club. Like, how can you explain to someone what makes your game stand out from the rest of, you know, the rest of the nude volleyball games out there?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a lot like Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball. Basically, it's the same thing. We just reskinned it and put some older gentleman's skin on it. And
I think the difference is that, you know, we've moved past jiggle physics. So
exactly.
We transcended.
Yeah. There's squiggle physics now.
That's really good.
We have a you know, extremely realistic pacemakers you can see beating through the chest.
But you can actually hear the arrhythmia.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, it's basically, I mean, there's some big twists in it, and I think we're going to be doing updates to it over time too, where, like, when you get to the end, I don't want to spoil the big twist, but, like, something happens, and there are other characters that are introduced and stuff, and I think there's going to be, like, a sequel that gets unlocked inside the game.
Whoa.
That's, you know, so I think there's going to be some other stuff. Yeah.
That's so cool, but this game's definitely deep enough to where that doesn't even surprise me to hear that. This game's wildin'.
I want to hear more from you, Brooke, because I know you went into this like, oh God, what did Joe sign me up for?
Yeah, I mean, I'm new to the show, and like, I'm getting to know Joe, but I don't know him that well yet. So sometimes he tosses me a game, I'm like, what's really happening here? I was like, yeah, let Chris take this one. And if I had known, I would never have let Chris take this. I'm surprised that Chris wasn't like, you sure you don't want this, dude? Because this is I think I'm going to make a prediction here. I think this game is going to get talked about. You know how much, what was that pigeon dating game? I should know this.
I had a full boyfriend.
Yeah. You know how everybody was talking about that, whether or not you play visual novels, whether or not you play dating games. It's more widely played, I think, in my friends than Doki Doki. I think this game is going to be talked about, like, more than had a full boyfriend. Like, and I hope it is. Like, I love the idea of, like, kind of a funny, deeper social sim. I think this has more going on. Like, I think this could really be a cult classic. I'm imagining some t-shirts with, like, the ref on there. I don't know. I think I want a t-shirt where I'm Lynn. Like, so, I don't know, man. I really think this could take off.
I actually changed the background, the banner image of my Facebook to a screenshot from this game.
No way.
The one, awesome. Yeah, the one where he says, my life feels like a video game with a really weird ending.
Oh my God, so good. I took a bunch of screenshots of this game that I was just going to be sending you, Chris. Like, I think it's got some gems.
After this, send me your mailing address. We actually made a custom volleyball sunscreen.
Oh my Lord.
Oh man, and no spoilers, but you're going to find out how bad you need that sunscreen when you're in this game.
Did any of you die playing the game? Because there is a way to die in it.
I did not, and now I'm super intrigued.
I didn't die. I was planning on doing that at some point.
Want to die?
There's only one way to do it, and I'll give you the clue on how to do it. Because a lot of time, there's just like a lot of things I'm learning from watching people play that like just needs some tweaks and stuff in the game and everything. But like when you're driving, and so this is, you know, like a normal volleyball game, you drive.
Got to get the games, man.
Exactly. But you can actually control the car. And so on the way to Seekonk, if you drive in the left lane for a while, it's pretty likely a car will hit you and you'll die. And a really sad ending.
I thought that was going to happen because I kept looking for it. And I was like, at one point I did pass an oncoming car. I was like, oh, I bet I could hit that.
That's the one.
I messed around so much with the driving. I'm like, there's got to be something here. I was like, there's got to be some secret here. And like, I was like, it's either I'm missing it and that's really funny, or he made it to where you can control the car and there's never any secret and he's just laughing at me. And that's really cool too.
I think just like over time, I want to just add in updates to it based on what I see people kind of doing too. And like, you know, be like, oh, this, cause I noticed different like opportunities for putting in some stuff that I just didn't think about at the time. Cause it was, you know, really, even though it took a long time to make, it was like when it came time, actually, this is the crazy part. It was, I was in like really heavy, heavy work mode. Cause like we had to pass in the files by a certain date, but at the same time I was doing a show that was like a mix between a video game and a live theater performance with the dancer and actor Brezhnikov. And so that was like a totally separate, and also those worlds aren't connected.
Wow.
but it was crazy amount of work doing this, and it was like two very, very different things. But the show that we were doing kind of got added a bunch of new dates, and we had to add a bunch of new stuff to it. And it was like, I forget why I just mentioned it. It was like just a crazy, crazy time. So it was like a lot of the stuff came together really, really fast, but it was just nonstop work. It was a fun, you know, like it was kind of how I would deal with the whole situation of, you know, being like, I kind of put a lot of that stuff into both of those, you know, the Brezhnikov piece is called Chekhov OS. And that's basically a live theater piece mixed with a video game. And actually they're performing some more dates of it. And it just got nominated for like a whole bunch of Broadway World awards and stuff. So it's like, I just found out a couple days ago.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Thanks. But yeah, that one. And the director of that, he's got a new piece coming out that's really looks awesome. But they're called Arlequin Players. If I recommend checking out any of their stuff, and you know, we made the Chekhov OS, I made the platform that runs it with them. So it was super fun. But yeah, you know, it was like all these things, you know, volleyball and Chekhov, like, I mean, the Chekhov one's super, like, both dark, but also, like, really funny. And then I did the Rock Gut game, which was super dark. And Find the Letter H was, like, the total opposite of it. So it's been, like, crazy couple of years. Just, like, you know, really. Just
all over the place.
Yeah. And if you like volleyball, you might like Rock Gut. Have any of you played that one? Or
I have not. I don't play much in the way of Steam games. I'm more of a console guy, which was going to be one of the questions. Is there any console plans for any of your games?
Yeah. I mean, well, Soda Drinker's on Xbox, but
nice.
But I would love any of them. I gotta get in touch with Xbox about volleyball. I don't know if they do it, but maybe.
Speedo men's beach volleyball.
Yeah, exactly.
Not quite.
And Rock Gut, that was part of the Dread X collection. So it was like that one, there's 10 other games in it. And we each made our own version of PT, or kind of like a thing inspired by PT. So like a playable trailer. Mm. And it was super fun project. And like all of the other folks on it were awesome. And actually, one of the... there's awesome developers in all of it. So it's like, but that was like right maybe a couple months into the pandemic. It was like such a scary, sad time. And it was like, they asked me to make a horror game. And I was like, yeah, I'm going down in this. Like, this is going to be like, put all that stuff in there. And like, if you read the reviews on it, it's either like people are like, this is the worst game in the collection. Like, all you do is walk down a down a tunnel and maybe die. And like, so some people, other people really liked it. Like, the fellow who made, Twisted Metal, Jaffe.
David Jaffe.
He said wicked nice stuff about it. And I was like, on the podcast, I was like, oh man, that's like, that guy's made some really neat stuff. So I was like, thank you. But I mean, it's funny reading the reviews on Steam. You know, some of them are just like, that game is, but you know, I don't know. Some people like, some make, some don't. That's fine. You know, it's like,
This is definitely going to be a game that either people like they fire it up and they just buy into it immediately, or they're just going to sit there confused and wondering what the hell is going on.
Totally. Because it's like if you go into it thinking it's going to be like really good volleyball mechanics, you'll probably be disappointed.
You're in danger.
like there's spelling errors and things in there, and it's like on purpose. So there's a lot of like, you'll see like the ref, sometimes his arms get stuck and, you know, like he looks like he has four arms or, you know.
Yeah, I got a three-armed ref at one point.
Yeah.
I love that that was clearly on purpose too. Like there were some visual effects around the screen around the time that like extra arm of the ref showing up. Yeah. And it just, it kind of like, it doesn't make it spooky, but it's just like that stuff's clearly intentional and it's just, it's done with a really deft hand. Like all that stuff you might not notice the first time you're playing that game. It's not in your face.
It's like a lot of the stuff, you know, and I guarantee there'll be, you know, people be like, oh, the animations or whatever, you know, and it's like, it's, but I mean, and that was the same thing with Rock Cut, where like, you know, there's parts in it that like are intentionally made to look like it's broken. It's like, you know, it's like sometimes that's, I just like that feeling of like uneasy and, you know, like, because I don't know,
something's wrong.
Yeah. Like, when I had the, it stinks. Someone hacked the Soda Drinker website, and now it's like down. I gotta like, I have a backup of it somewhere, but like, I wanted the website of that to like make it look like you could get a virus from it. You know, had like pop ups and stuff, but now you probably can get a virus from it.
No. So don't go check it out yet. Wait until the fake virus is there, not exactly. The real one.
Yeah, but no, there's nothing on the website now. It's just, it stinks. I don't know why or how it happened. I just noticed it maybe like a month ago, and I'm just gonna put it back up. But it's been crazy, just busy. You know, just kind of
putting the game out and everything. Yeah,
yeah. It's like making sure the ref's arms are messed up just in the right way.
Oh man. So what kind of feedback have you gotten for the game so far? I know I told you it needs volume settings. Mm-hmm. And I would love to turn off that CRT filter. That's just me though. Those things always mess with me.
Yeah, I think those are doable. You know, definitely. I mean, all that's doable, really. So it's like but yeah, I mean, I think that's what are other, you know, and I'm curious. One thing that I personally think is like, I feel like on one hand, I want the matches to like go faster somehow, but it's also like, it's if you're playing about the matches, and I think that's where there's like almost a little disconnect, because say in a visual novel, the frame is, this is just dialogue, you know?
Yeah.
And with a sports game, the frame is barely ever, this is just dialogue. It's like, I think there might be a little bit of a disconnect, but kind of curious to see what, you know, like I've seen a decent amount of people play it and some reviews and stuff. And they've been, you know, the ones that get it really like it. And the ones that, you know, treat it like it should be this like super awesome controls and stuff, like, you know, they think it stinks.
So. They're looking for actual volleyball game.
Yeah,
exactly.
Volleyball in this game is terrible. Ah, oh no, you're right. Yes.
Yeah. It was the, you know, without spoiling anything, it the person who made the volleyball game, it was their first volleyball game. Oh. And,
first volleyball game, you already made him do a nude one? That's a challenge.
Gotta start somewhere. Clothes come later.
Yeah, yeah, you know, clothes are DLC.
That's downloadable clothes.
How they get you those in-app purchases. You can buy pants for the ref if you just can't take it anymore.
You're just going balls out with these purchases.
I was joking with someone the other day about like putting in like a super gratuitous like nude mode or something.
But, dangling dicks and where to find them.
Yeah. How about some wiggle physics? Here we go. No one's stepped on that realm yet.
Yeah. If you beat the game, you can unlock that mode because it makes it harder. Things are harder to focus.
All right. We have found the bottom of the barrel.
We have. Well, I know we've been chatting about the game for a while. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we haven't brought up?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see.
Part of me wants to talk about exiting the game, but the other part of me doesn't want to talk about exiting the game because I don't want to ruin that for people.
You know, I guess maybe just if you exit the game, don't press Alt F4 to do it. Do it through the main menu.
Yes, or very important. Every,
do it.
Yeah, yeah, because that's something just worth to keep in mind. I don't want to spoil it. I think when you do exit the game, there's going to be stuff that, like, that's where some updates are going to come into play in later versions of it, too. So,
nice.
I think there's some stuff we can play with there for sure. Oh, there was an idea I had this afternoon that I think I won't be able to have it ready for Friday, but I think it's 90% sure going to get in the game. And it's going to be long arm mode, where it's just going to be all the characters have like super long arms.
Oh my god.
The long arm of the Len.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I'm sold.
Chris. So good.
I'm sold. Well, speaking of being sold, when is it coming out? How much is it going to be? Give us all the details on the game.
Yeah, so it's this Friday, December 10th, on Steam. And it's also available now on Humble Trove. And I think if you're a Humble Choice, you get the Humble Trove part of it. And and I think it'll be $6.99, but it's a 10% off on the weekend of the launch. So, I'm excited. It's like, I'm so curious to see. You know, it's just so nice seeing more people playing it and stuff. We kind of sent it to some folks on Twitch to play, and it's, I don't know, it's exciting. So I hope, you know, if you play it, you enjoy the game, and if you don't, that you play a game that you do enjoy.
Oh, man. Well, Will, it has been awesome having you on the show. We're going to have to let you get going. We have a lot more show that we have to take care of with some reviews. But it's been a pleasure having you on chatting. Let's get you back on sometime before the next 6 years.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, thanks so much. It was great talking with all of you. So,
awesome meeting you. Yep. Just bought Rocka. It took 5 seconds to download. So
awesome. Cool.
Do you have any final words before we let you go?
No, just say, you know, say thanks again for having me. And, you know, thanks to everyone playing games and making games and all that fun stuff. So,
congrats again.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. You have yourself a good night.
All right, too. All right. I'll see you. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Have a good night.
Bye. What a lovely man.
Oh, man, that was good stuff. It's such a weird game, and I don't think anyone is really going to understand until they play it.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're anything, yeah, I mean, it's possible, yeah, though, because isn't that what happened with Doki Doki Literature Club, though? Yeah. I mean, people talk about, like, what the hell is this game? It's like, you just got to play it. I can't tell you anything about it.
Yeah, there are games like that where you just have to be like I was recommending Inscription to a coworker a couple weeks ago, and I was like, this is one of those ones where I just tell you, and you just buy it, and you just have to put all of your trust into me to let that happen. That's really it. So,
and this is one of those games, and we'll talk about it. We'll give our review next week on the show. That way it'll have time for it to launch. But we have reviews we got to take care of now. Are you guys ready to get into these?
Let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Chorus, developed by Deep Silver Fish Labs, published by Deep Silver, released December 3rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Should I read this slower, Tim? Are you getting ready?
Everyone said they were ready except for me, and then I realized that I wasn't. I was like, oh shit, right, I'm first. I have to switch gears and get my stop dicking around over here and get ready to talk some game.
Indeed. Take All control right, of Nara on a quest to destroy the dark cult that created her, unlock devastating weapons and mind-bending abilities in an evolution of the space combat shooter, along with Forspoken, her sentient starfighter, explore ancient temples, engage in zero-G combat, and venture beyond waking reality. Tim, tell us about your time with Chorus.
Oh my god, this game is... I bit off so much more than I thought I would be chewing with this game, which is what I get for just, like, very briefly looking up, skipping ahead in the trailer and being like, okay, yeah, that looks good. All right, yeah, sure. Whatever, Joe, stop asking me about stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I was definitely in the middle of something when you were texting me about it, but it did look cool, and it turns out the game is pretty cool, fortunately. It was just... yeah, so this is a fucking open world, like, third person space shooter game, which is what really threw me for a loop. So yeah, you know, at a glance, at the glance I took of this game when I agreed to review it, I was like, oh, this looks like a cool third person space shooter game, possibly in the vein of like your old Star Wars, like Rogue Leader, like Colony Wars, some old games from like 20 years ago that nobody remembers, except for us old fuckers. And yeah, what I got is part that, but also a game that takes place in the open world. So yeah, the game starts you off and gives you some backstory on your main character and where she comes from and the empire that she used to fight for and how she is now not part of that. And it's kind of a big info dump right off the bat. And I don't know if they just did that. Yeah. It initially made me think like, oh, did you guys like run out of time and have to like cut all this prologue stuff? Or now I'm kind of like, oh, they did it for pacing, because there's still a lot of game to go after that point. But anyway, it drops you in, you know, some time has passed and you're out at the fringes of the star system, helping out some free people and just kind of defending him from pirates. And then of course the past comes calling in your crazy cult of, religious fanatics that want to blow up worlds that don't join their chorus. That's where the name of the game comes from.
I see there.
Yeah. They will just, yeah. If you don't join them, they just wipe your ass, off the face of the galaxy.
And I'm glad there was more after wipe your ass, because
yes,
there was a little delay there and I was worried.
I had to swallow.
Gonna need to fix that in post.
Yeah.
Nope.
Nope. Make it longer.
nothing wrong with a good old pregnant pause. So, yeah, you play like all the parts of the game that you control, you are in your ship. So you will be, after you get past kind of like the tutorial mission, you are dropped in to this, the game is broken up into like kind of different large areas that you will fly about in your ship. So like all your gameplay takes place in the ship, like you flying around. When you go to like talk somebody, you are like flying up to their space station or their ship and you are pressing talk and then accepting the mission. The only time when she is out of her ship, is in cutscenes, but otherwise it is 100% in a ship. The game, I think, looks pretty fantastic, at least on PS5. Like, the spacescapes that you're visiting just look really, really nice. And it's just really nice, smooth frame rate. Kind of my only knock, throwing up some air quotes here, against the graphics is that the areas, the zones I've been going to have been a little bit samey, because they, like, I haven't gone to any areas. I have not gotten to like the last couple areas of the game, but none of them are like, have been like planet side. It's all been pretty much, I'm out in space and there's a bunch of like asteroids around. Like literally the first two areas are just two different asteroid fields. They're mining colonies, or just areas with debris floating around. So it's kind of like, yeah, this looks cool, but it's not a massive visual difference. This is a not a big knock. It just is what it is. So you are in your ship and you are flying around and you are engaging in space combat, and you get yourself, your ship is loaded out with eventually, well, for starters, a Gatling gun. That's your main weapon. Then you eventually get a laser, which is good at breaking enemy shields. Nice. You get missiles, which are good against enemy armor. There is a shop for purchasing upgrades for your ship. And that you can buy like health and shield upgrades, weapon upgrades. And then you have like three support slots for attaching, just kind of customizing things for more defense or more, offensive capability. In addition to like your standard weapons, you also have space magic. So the first thing they give you is kind of like your, which you may have seen in several other open world games, where they give you kind of like a detective senses or your assassin senses, where you push a button and it kind of does like a radar scope thing to show you, you know, collectibles that are near you or quest things you need to go and collect, or just different points of interest on the map. It is important to note that there are two modes. If you are picking up this game, there are two modes to that sense ability. One where you just tap the button and one where you hold the button down. The one where you hold the button down is more of a long range sensor. The one where you just tap it is a short range one. I was banging my head against one particular quest because I did not realize this, and I could not find the fucking thing I needed to collect because I was holding down the button and just getting like long range markers on my HUD and not finding the things that were like right around me that I needed to find. Because it's tough. Like, keep in mind, you are doing open world like collection and like tracking and trying to find quest markers in a fully like 3D plane. Like, you know, in most of these games, you're a man walking on land. So there can be things above you, but you're kind of like, you can see where the above you is. It's mostly laid out on a 2D plane in front of you. But here it's like, you know, it's up, down, over here. There's asteroids floating around. Like, shit could be anywhere. So you really need this stuff in order to find what you're looking for, because otherwise you'll be lost. And sometimes you'll get a little bit lost anyways, because it's just kind of like one of the challenges of what they're doing with the game. But you have that. The second space magic you get is freaking awesome, because basically you get a enemy ship in your sights and then you tap the button and you teleport right behind them.
That sounds handy.
Oh, you light them the fuck up. and it never gets old. It's great. And it seems like it's overpowered and against like kind of lighter ships, it is. But there are other ships where you'll teleport behind them and they have shields behind them, and then they'll just turn around and suddenly you're just sitting behind a ship that's not moving and it's blasting you in the face. So you do have to be careful. And you get a couple more later on in the game, which, you know, I'll leave the surprise, but there's cool stuff to be picked up later on as well. With your ship itself, along with you control, like your left stick controls kind of your vertical and horizontal axis, like without tipping the ship. So it's like if you were basically, your dodge is on the left stick, or if you just, you're just like doing micro adjustments to your ship as it's moving forward. Well, actually, no, you push forward and then you go forward, you pull back, and that slows you down. And left and right will have you do a barrel roll. And the right stick is what you use to kind of pitch your ship up and down through space, or left and right, and actually maneuver. So you're using both sticks generally to maneuver your ship around. You eventually get, like, once you get your aforementioned ship, Forza, you get, not Forza, but Forza, you get this drift ability, where like you'll be boosting and then you let off the boost and you hold down L1 and push on the direction, and you'll kind of like slide around through space, which is a way to do like quick turns. And or if like there's like a capital ship you're attacking and it has like an array of, you know, things you need to shoot on one side of it, you can kind of like boost at it and then let off and then hit the drift and turn, so you're just kind of flying sideways across the side of the ship and you know, shooting the targets along the side, and then like you pick up your speed again once you've blown them up and you fly away. And if that sounds cool, it's that it is. But it is
there.
it is difficult to get a handle on, but you, like, you know, when you get it, they kind of make you figure it out. It's just like some tricky button combinations to get the hang of, but eventually, you know, I got it and I was doing it. You know, it is something not to be glazed over, but this game does let you, it lets you do cool shit and feel cool doing it. Like, you know, like teleporting behind enemies, like sliding along the side of capital ships. Like, they have larger ones that where, you know, you have to blow up a certain number of like shield, you know, whatever ding dongs around the outside to expose the core. And then you fly inside the ship to blow up the core. And then you have to fly out of it before the core explodes. Like, I've had dogfights around like, you know, space stations and stuff where you are like literally like weaving around the structure, like chasing an enemy through it. And it's like, man, this feels really cool and also looks cool at the same time. Like, this is good stuff. And on top of that, there's like a really good, once you get going, it kind of takes like maybe a few hours. Like, early on in the game, it's pretty much just you're facing basic enemy ships, and some of them have shields. Oh no. But like, once your ship gets a good number of abilities, then they really start ramping it up with enemy ships that have different abilities that you have to watch out for. Like, one has a lock-on like railgun, and you have to do your dodge right before it goes off or you're going to get fried. And like other enemy ships that are like, will just try to ram you and have heavier shields. So there's good variety there. I mean, most of the quests, you know, as you're going through the world, like the side quests and stuff are pretty standard. Like, go here, look for this thing, go here. Oh, there's some enemies I have to shoot. It's like one of those two things, but that's fine because it's all pretty fun. And like, even though it's a large map with a lot of ground to cover, you can actually cover it relatively quickly. Your ship has kind of three different speeds. There's just like a pretty slow one where that's if you're like just using the stick. There's a more short range boost, which is holding the left trigger, and that's what you'll use most of the time when you're like maneuvering around areas or you're in dogfights. And then it has a sublight drive, so it's like, okay, I just need to get from here to over there fast, and you just click in the stick and then you go faster. And it really, you get there pretty quick. Despite it saying like, oh, that's like 50 kilometers away, it'll take you like maybe 10-15 seconds really to fly over there.
It keeps the action moving.
Yeah, it doesn't like make traveling around like a chore, really. You're not just spending a minute running, you know, flying from point A to point B, unless you're really far away from point B.
Yeah. Well, speaking of spending, they're asking people to spend $40 on this one. What do you think of it?
Hey, I'm asking you to let me finish my review, boy.
Oh, shit. Oh,
no,
my God.
There are.
Fight.
That was EOI, boy, by the way.
Blood in the sand.
No, there are some like kind of rough edges to the game. Just like I mentioned, some hard to find objects. Like, there is some awkward story beats. I've seen people online. Some people seem to just absolutely hate the story. Some people like it. I've seen more people that just like, oh my God, well, it's the game's good except for the story. Like, I think the story is interesting. I'm not saying it's the hottest banger of a story I've seen in a game, but like, it has some interesting lore and stuff going on that, you know, I don't find it to be it's not like ruining my experience, and I'm not like mashing my way through cutscenes. Like, I want to see what the game has to say, even if sometimes it's like a little bit silly. your character, and the game is fully voice acted, by the way, your main character will like whisper her internal monologue, which is kind of funny to me sometimes. And she talks a lot. Like, there is a lot of dialogue and story in this game, but it's just funny sometimes when you're flying around and she's just like, you know, oh my God, and then this, and I killed all these people, and it's just like talking to herself. But yeah, lots of side quests and collectibles and stuff to do. It's a pretty beefy game for, okay, now you can go, Joe.
For $40, what are you?
God damn it, Joe! That was a ten. No, yeah, for $40. I think this is a definite buy. It. It is. You know, it's one of those. It is a, you know, a quote B game, which you don't see all that much of, that are like a little bit cheaper. They're a little bit rough around the edges, but I feel like they do some really cool stuff. That make them worth checking out. Like, I feel like if this game was just reskinned with Star Wars and cost like $30 more, people would be all over it. You know, wow. Like dead ass. Like I think people would be loving it. Like if it was a full price next gen game, which is 70, but you know, $60. Yeah, no, I think people would be picking it up, and well, they'd also be more judgmental because it's Star Wars, but still the idea is, yeah, I think people would pay more for the gameplay contained within, and it should definitely be checked out.
Nice. For sure. I might have to pick this kind of game. This one's been on my wish list. I was kind of like hemming and hawing over it, but knowing that it's open world and that there's just so much to do, I think you sold me on it.
It's fun. I had not even heard of this game before you like asked me if I was interested in playing it. So this is totally out of left field for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Mecha Jammer, developed by Whale Knot Studios, published by Modern Wolf, released December 2nd on Steam for $24.99, a tactical cyberpunk turn-based RPG set in an off-world grindhouse jungle colony. Skulk through the shadows or charge in guns blazing, recruit a unique party for large squad-based assaults as your adventure plunges you deep into the city's streets. Purnell, tell us a little bit about Mecha Jammer.
Okay, so Mecha Jammer is essentially a game where you are kind of tossed onto this, I guess, alien world, because you are piloting a spaceship along with two co-pilots. You crash land, and they immediately try to take you into slavery. But fuck that, you ain't having it. So people got to die, and you got to get the heck out of Dodge. That's the premise. And honestly, I'm strangely kind of torn on how I feel about this game, and I'll talk about why, I guess, as I progress through this review.
So, I'll talk about my gripe right away. Controller support's broken, and that just destroys the game for me. My controller wouldn't work. There's a controller icon in the settings. I couldn't figure out how to get it to recognize my controller, and I can't do mouse and keyboard. I suck at it. My brain doesn't process that shit.
For me, normally I'm not a mouse keyboard guy, but given the nature of this game being as, you know, Fallout 2-esque in that sense, it's a turn-based RPG. Like, in that regard, since it's not Twitch related or anything like that, I'm generally okay with working with it, though I will have to add something in regards to that as I progress. But I could see if this was like something more action-based, but since it's not, I was like, okay, I wanted a controller, but I mean, they need to add it because the icon is there, but yeah. It wasn't something that made me, it wasn't a deal breaker, at least going in. But when you start the game out, you have to pretty much build your avatar up. You get like a number of like facial profiles and the like, and it's similar to Fallout also. I'm mentioning that specifically because I'm pretty sure they were hoping that that was the sort of like classic gameplay that would see this game and go, yeah, that's my jam. But you can like pretty much like customize your character using what's called, under something called virtues and also something called studies. Think of those as your perks from Fallout and also just like general, you know, character concepts that are used to build what your stats will be. How much noise you make when you walk, how much health you get, how quickly your health comes back, a yada, a yada. And the perks element, that's for more so virtues, but the perks element is how you are, how proficient you are with various abilities or just things such as one-handed weapons or guns, or the case of my character, which I kind of regret, but hey, it's my guy. I do what I want. I went with pretty much hacking and like chemistry related stuff. I was so all about, I'm going to have this science guy. What a dumb idea that was. I'm getting my ass wrecked all over town and back. Because another element to this game that works out is when you're exploring the world, it was designed in a way where you are supposed to be able to recruit companions to come along with you when you come across them. And they make it a fairly simple process. You walk up on a guy, damn near any guy, and you say, I want to charm this guy. And then they do a roll check. If you succeed, you charm them, and if you fail it, you don't. And it's interesting, though, because it's very rare, if ever, that they really penalize you for failing on the roll check. It's just like, come on, no, come on, no, come on, no. Just keep doing it until maybe you succeed. But I got bored and stopped simply because I didn't put anything in the social, because, you know, lab guy. So obviously I don't think the odds of me charming anybody was in my favor. So that was a loss on me. But as you're exploring the world itself, you're running around, you are looking at terminals to try to like hack them to like, you know, activate switches and bridges and doors. And it's interesting how this game does that, because in a lot of games of this caliber, you will have to, they usually have like a note section where when you select something or you learn something, you just press a button and go to the menu, and it's like, it just updates your quest willy-nilly. So you just got to roll down and say, this is where I last left off. Boom. But in this game, you kind of can't, because there's a book and they expect you to take your own notes. So another bit of retro mania there. Some will like it, some won't. I had mixed bags there. I mean, I was just playing Zelda 2 last night. I was taking notes all over frickin' place. But essentially, there's no hand-holding in this game, essentially. You'll come into it ready to flop if you can't hack with it.
Dude, I couldn't even hack the tutorial.
And I think there may be a partial reason for that, too, which I should mention now since you said it. I feel like the controls got a little better as I got into the main game, though there's still some issues. But the controls are kind of finicky sometimes. So it's a click and move. So you click on a space, you walk to it. And if you need to jump, because there's a jump feature in this game, you have to hold the shift key, use the mouse to land on a spot, and click there, and your character's supposed to make the jump. In the tutorial, that thing barely, if ever, worked. Like, I was struggling to get my character to leap into like pits or into like a little circle, and then out of the circle and across the way over the fence. Drove me freaking nuts. Somehow in the main game, I've been having a lot less trouble leaping through the windows, and like primarily leaping through windows, because that's me trying to escape from jerks like Third Hand Luke or whatever the hell his name is. but it just like, it was, there was moments where like the jumping was driving me nuts. But even in the main game, there were times where like you're supposed to be able to click on something and that's when you walk there. But there were times, like, say I'm in a skirmish with enemies, so means like all my moves count for something because enemies don't move unless you move. So I'm trying to move my cursor, so I'm going to aim for this guy's head and I'm going to attack it, because you can choose, you know, torso, head, or legs to attack in this game. But instead, the game would just like on its own say, "You're going to start walking." I'm like, "No, don't walk!" He'll just start walking, which is triggering the enemies and start stabbing me in the anklets. You know, because why not? This nutball who has no social skills is just going to walk past a guy holding two knives and like nothing's gone wrong. So, of course, we get my ass stabbed to death. So, it drove me nuts that I had to stare and do like, why is this happening? Why is this happening? I should not be moving like this. But in the event that that doesn't happen, I'm actually okay with the combat, too, if that's not happening. Because there's a sneaking mechanic where you can hit the sneak button and you kind of creep around and you make a certain amount of noise, and enemies have vision cones. So they're skulking out trying to find you. And if they do, of course, they'll run up on you and start attacking. But if you attack first, either with a weapon or with a physical or a gun weapon, you can get the drop on them. And I did that a lot of the time. And if you eventually get out of combat, you do have a health regen ability. So you don't have to just burn through your limited health kits to succeed.
Who's there?
NBC. Avon. Avon who? Avon these nuts. No, whatever. So.
Oh my God. Brooke, what did you think of this? I know you dabbled in it a little bit.
Well, I'm like you, Joe. I barely got through the tutorial. I did get through it, but like it wasn't the fault of controller support. As a gamer girl growing up in the early 90s, I get a little insecure. You know, I never want to be the person who I got to get my boyfriend to help me get through the tutorial and show me what I'm doing wrong. That is what happened to me in this game. I don't know if it's me or not, but Purnell, remember when they teach you how to jump and you're supposed to jump over the fence?
Yes, it's a pain in the ass.
Dude, I didn't know it was a fence for like 10 minutes. I finally went crying to my boyfriend. I'm like, man, I can't jump over this ditch. And he's like, I think that's a fence. I think instead of jumping over a river or ditch, you got to climb the fence. So I was like, oh, word, okay. So I tried it. Turns out you don't have to jump over the fence either. The door's open. I just had to walk over there. So I was just jumping on the other side over and over again. Then they're like, oh, okay, now we're going to teach you how to jump. I'm like, what the fuck was I just doing then?
Being very excited. Like, yes.
dude, they're like, you gotta jump through a window. I didn't, like, I felt so dumb and I felt like so old. I'm like, can I not see? It was a little dark and grainy for me, even when I turned up my brightness.
Well, it's good you say that, because honestly, no, you weren't dumb at all. Well, normally you're not dumb, and you're not dumb in this instance either.
Normally
I'm not dumb.
I covered both cases, Joe. You bite me, try to get me in trouble. I feel like the visuals in this game make it tough to decipher sometimes what's a door and what's a window. And you might have been like, is that even a freaking window, or is it a cabinet?
Window inside of the door, the first one you come across. So then, I turn up my brightness. It was a little hard for me to tell what exactly was going on. And then sometimes I thought, oh, I just need to practice jumping more or something, and then I'll be able to get through it. So after all this trouble with the tutorial, I actually went to check out if the game was already out yet, because I figured, oh, it must be in beta or something, because the tutorial really doesn't hold your hand. And I understand that this game is supposed to be bringing back the charm of games that don't hold your hand, like you mentioned, Pernell, like, you're supposed to be taking your own notes. You're not just clicking stuff and have it added to a quest log. And I remember really enjoying games like that and kind of missing games like that. But yeah,
I'm too old for shit like that.
Well, now I am too. That's what this game taught me. Like, it's over for me. But I think, like, I love 80s horror so much. I love 80s action movies. John Carpenter is my favorite director. The whole aesthetic of the game is really, really doing it for me. And I think it's awesome. I just think maybe they overcommitted to the aesthetic a little much with these graphics. Maybe it's a little too dark and grimy, and then we can't see windows or something. I don't know. That was just my take on it.
That's fair. I can tell you right now, as going beyond the, even having like dabbled more in the city stuff in the outside the tutorial, trust me, the visuals don't get better, and like the deciphering stuff. And I should add one more thing too, which is that there is shadow play involved in this game, which is both great and also bad. So,
yeah, LOL.
Shadow play. So in this game, stealth is your friend. And as you are moving through the game, you'll come across dark zones that you can kind of skulk into. Shadowy zones. When you hover your cursor over it, the hand will turn purple, which indicates if you're in there, no one can see you. However, addition to that, like, normally that's cool, but they also decide to do a thing where lighting plays a role in, like, the space you can see. So if you're standing outside of a door and you open it, the door swings open, you can only see, like, that immediate cone going from the entrance to inside the room. So you might be thinking, okay, well, I could just, you know, click somewhere in the black space and I'll just walk in and the room will light up. And while the second part does happen, the first does not. Instead, you have to click in the small lit section of the room, then the next small lit section of the room, and then eventually maybe you can click into the full room. But there's a weird level of tedium to that. Like, just let me go into sneak mode, click a space in the room, and just illuminate it as I walk in. Don't,
you know, it would help with that?
Peaceful click. A controller would do...
Goddamn right, a controller would help with that.
I will say, though, I would not be shocked, given the nature of this game, if controller support would still even be you using the thumbstick to move a cursor. Because maybe, by design of the game, there's no... Like, it's not really designed around the idea of like walking up to a thing and pressing A. Now I'm opening it. It's all that clicky, clicky, clicky shit. Like, even... I feel like the thumbstick would just be a cursor. Like, if they can change that, that would be good for a lot of people, though I wager also when you start dealing with like controlling your, you know, minions and stuff, that might become a bit rough because you're not going to want to, you know, right bumper to every minion to move them or anything like that. You're going to want to be able to say, go there, muckethead, and they're just going to do their thing. So while controller support would be nice, and I would have preferred it myself, I would not be shocked if controller support in this style of game would still be moving a cursor, not moving the player character.
Oh, that would be disappointing. But the game's $24.99. What do the two of you think?
I got to add one last thing. I'm sorry. We can't jump into it just
yet. Jeez, Joe. Seems like on.
God, I'm 0 for 2 on if you guys are done with... I fucking quit.
The show's been going great.
Well, the thing is, I have to mention this because I'd feel guilty if I didn't. It's a very important element, which is that there was one annoying bug that occurred to me in this game, and it freaked me out initially.
but it turned out it was just a bug. And that is when the game went through the introduction, and also once or twice on a load, it would go through the introduction, the characters would have their dialogue, and then it's like, okay, time for the game to start. And I'm like, okay, now I just got to move my guy. But my guy won't move. And I'm like, my guy, and I couldn't do anything. I had to actually, like, you know, exit out and reload my file to get my character to start to actually activate the movement. Like, once I did that, I could move, but that initial start, I couldn't do anything, and I didn't know why. It freaked me out. And I don't know if that's happened to anybody else, but it's worth noting just in case this is a situation that might be based off of, like, maybe a dip switch in the game or something. Yeah, I use old terminology for arcades. Shoot me. but something in the game that might have triggered it from how my experience ran out. So,
but can I ask what you think for $25 now? Am I allowed?
Yes, you're allowed, Joe. We still think you're good.
No, you don't.
You're right. You're a piece of shit, but we love you.
So $24.99 on MechaJammer. What do you think?
Honestly, I think it's at least a genuine try. Like it's not going to, you know, win any, like, woo, ew, this, well, like, you know, the awards for, like, you know, the visuals in that sense, because, like, we were talking about before, there's some, like, trouble deciphering things here and there. But I can definitely see the charm in the game as I was playing through it, trying to bribe homeless people with 10 Waterloons, wherever the currency is, and failing, that kind of thing. I felt enjoyment in the game once I got past, you know, just some of the initial hurdles I had, so it's definitely at least on the try scale.
Brooke, any thoughts?
I think this game is a lot of people's shit. Like Purnell said, they're really trying to channel and, like, attract the Fallout 2 fans. I think that this game could make a lot of people happy. And for this price point, I want to say buy it if it sounds good to you. But like Purnell said, I think there are some serious bugs. I was reading earlier today. I didn't get to play any more today, but I read that I think on the 5th or 6th, they patched a ton of bugs already. If you look at the reviews on Steam, most of the negative reviews are just like, hey, I really, really want to like this game. It ticks all my boxes, but it doesn't work right yet. A lot of those reviews have already been edited to be like, hey, it was either the 5th or 6th, like, they changed what I hated. But, you know, I think with some more patches and maybe like a little tweaking, this is a definite buy it. Otherwise, it's a try it, like Purnell said.
I'm glad you two enjoyed it. I wasn't feeling this one that much, but oh, well. Next game to talk about is Deer Simulator, your average everyday deer game developed by Gibier Games, Gibier Game, I don't know, whatever. Published by Playism, released November 23rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Deer Simulator is a game in which you take on the role of your average everyday deer. Use your stretchy neck, your stabby horns, and everything a deer has in its arsenal to tear through the city, frolic and play with the other animals, or decimate the city till there's nothing left in this slow life town destruction game. Tim, what the hell's going on here?
I'm not sure if the person who made this game has ever, I don't know how much they know about deer.
oh, deer.
But it says,
you mean a deer doesn't have a stretchy neck?
I think it might have been made by my friend Ben Lathan, who is a noted fear of deer. water.
Or deer.
So this game is a mess, but that's kind of the point. This game is just a fucking disaster, but that's the idea. You play as the titular deer with your deer powers, such as, I don't know the whole deal with the stretching of the neck on the deer. I don't know why that's a thing, but it is a thing. You can stretch out your neck to, like, grab onto cars and trees and people. That's awesome. Could be described as a core mechanic of the game. You can attack things with your hooves. You can run, and when you run, you get up on your hind legs, and your arms kind of, your front legs go to the side, and you just you run along like a man, very fast, and you run can like use this man to grab people and throw them. So basically what the game ends up playing out like is like, I don't know, the first half hour that somebody spent with a Grand Theft Auto game 20 years ago, where you're just going to go in there and cause as much fucking havoc as possible in as little amount of time and just go absolutely buck nuts and see what chaos you can cause. That's basically what's going on. You have like a little open world city that you can rampage around in. And the more you rampage, the more your star rating goes up and the more dangerous enemies come after you. The first wave of cops is sheep cops. Then they send out the cop car, which is like, if you would imagine like a hermit crab, except the shell is a police car and the crab is a polar bear. That's what that is. And it escalates from there, and your deer, as deer can and are wont to do, you can find guns and replace your antlers with guns and have guns popping out of your neck. And this is like the least of what goes on in this game. It's really a game about, it's just so freaking weird. And watching physics. Did I mention you can hijack vehicles? Because yeah, you can hijack vehicles drive. I don't really feel like you're driving them so much as you're like omnipotently commandeering them with your deer brain.
Yeah, commandeering?
You can't.
Yes, exactly. No, he's right.
Why?
Nah, he's right.
No, he's right. I said the word. And just plowing over people in the street, crashing into buildings, causing chaos, and again escalating. And the game. This is not a long game from beginning to end. It feels like something you are meant to purchase and then play with an audience. Like you're having friends over and you want to be like, look at this nonsense, or everybody sits down and takes a turn with the deer, or you're a Twitch streamer it is something that is to be enjoyed with people. Played by yourself, you'll get some laughs out of it, but it's short, and the laughs will be gone. But then, of course, you could just get the achievements, all the achievements pretty quick as well. which I know that has some great appeal to certain people on this podcast.
Oh, God, yeah.
It is a weird, busted mess. Like, I want to say issues with, like, collision detection and whatnot, but it's kind of the point. Right? Like, it's kind of the point that you're going to grab onto objects in the environment and throw them, and just clipping disasters will take place.
It's like if you're playing Goat Simulator for legit Goat Simulation. That's not what you're getting in this
game. No. You are not here to live the life of a deer. No. It's an island city. I don't think a deer would ever be there. I'm not a deer expert. I used to get deer in my yard till I put up a fence, and now they can't get in anymore, which is good. Sometimes, and like, I live, in a not far from like the city, and just like, yeah, I'd have deer in my backyard, and they did not have stretchy necks nor guns.
Well, that's a letdown.
But again, this is Deer Simulator, not Deer Simulator. So this is simulating what it's like to be a deer with 5 E's in it. I counted. So yeah, if you're looking for a disaster of a game to play with some friends and have some laughs, this deer has got your back. I got to the end of the review before Joe asked.
It's $20. What are your thoughts on it?
$20. That's quite a bit. This game isn't very long.
You know what's good though? It's on Game Pass.
Oh, there you go. The old, yep, you should be subscribing to Game Pass. Yeah, no, honestly, like $20 is probably too much for this game. I'm sorry. For its length and quality of content, it's something that you're going to want to pick up on sale to enjoy its bounty of madness. But I feel like for $20, you should probably be spending your money on something maybe a little less intentionally ridiculous.
Like Game Pass.
And busted. Yeah, like Game Pass. Yeah, buy yourself a month of Game Pass for less than that. Play Deer Simulator, and then after the hour's up, play something else on there that's
Play Forza.
That catches your play. Yeah, you could do that. You could play, you know, unpacking. That's a delay.
Oh, unpacking is really good.
Well, yeah. Very enjoyable. Yeah, I got a number.
Where did you say, Purnell, you didn't come through at all?
I said I need to start unpacking.
You should. It's a really good game.
Yeah, I played it on Veterans Day, beginning to end.
The whole game? Damn.
It's not long, but it's fantastic.
Huh. What if it'll scratch my Wilmot's warehouse itch?
It might. Yeah. It is about organizing and putting things away.
Oh, shit. It's
beginning. Oh, shit. Deer Simulator will not, though.
No. Get back to
that. Oh. That will not scratch that itch. Sorry.
All right. Well, Tim, that is it for you. Yes.
Very night good. Night, Tim.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm sleepy.
You sleepy? You go night night.
I teepee. I need to go night night. I'm tired.
Onward to Slumbrosia.
Oh, that's a great word. All right. Well, I bid you all good night before Joe can ask me for final thoughts. Yay. Bye.
Final thoughts. Bye. I'm
not saying a fucking thing.
So for $24.99, what do you think?
Next game to talk about is Happy's Humble Burger Farm, developed by Scythe Dev Team, published by Tiny Build, released December 3rd on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Congrats, you're hired. Serve customers and maintain Happy's Humble Burger Farm restaurant alone on the overnight. But be careful, things fall apart if you mess up. After work, head home and keep your eyes open for a way to escape the barnyard buns and their fast food fever dream. Brooke, what's going on here?
Ooh, this game is nuts. This game was crazy. I had quite a time playing this. This is a fun one for me to play. It was a weird one for me to play, especially given that I didn't pick it out or know anything about it before Joe slid me the code. This is an open world, first person, fast food cooking and life simulator horror game. So just a couple
of minutes. That's a lot of stuff.
Couple seconds for that to sink in. So yeah, this was nuts for me to load up because for those of you who haven't been paying attention, when SML Podcast account on Twitter makes a post about Tuesday nights, I go by McDonald's Goth online. That's like my whole online identity is basically horror, fast food, specifically burgers, and JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. So this game got 2 out of 3. So that was pretty creepy for me. It hit me really hard. And Chris here has known me forever and knows that I actually have a long and storied history of working for different fast food restaurants through my teenage and young adult years. I've worked for Taco Bell, Arby's. This guy knows what I'm talking about. Hardee's, Quiznos. Those are just the fast food restaurants. I've got well over a decade of service industry under my belt before selling out and going corporate last year. Nice. Let me tell you, this may very well be an atmospheric horror game that is fantastic with a really great sense of humor. But it's a very realistic simulation game. Every morning, or I guess night, because you're working the overnight shift, literally didn't realize that until Joe read us that. Every night, you wake up in your grungy apartment, maybe take a shower if you really need it, and then you're going to walk out of your apartment, through the lobby, down the side of the road for a while. You got to walk in this game to work, at least at first. This game's, you're not just going to magically get to work by leaving the house. So you got to follow signs along the road. You got to find it. While you're walking to work, you might hear some sirens, some screams, maybe a car crash or two, but it's like your boss says, you got to keep your eyes on the prize. That is not your problem. You got one problem, and it's that you live in a dystopian capitalist society, and you've got to be on time to flip burgers, or you are literally going to die.
Holy shit.
It's intense. Once you get to work, you got to clock in. Then you got to go turn on the lights, and you got to turn on the appliances, like the grill and the fryers. Turn on the open side, and you get to cooking. Extra credit, I think. I don't know if it counts. If you pick up some of the garbage around the lobby, you take the rats out of the rat traps. I've been doing that every day. I don't know if there's any point. So if you want to turn on some music, probably no effect, just like in real life. If you want to turn on some music, you can go to the jukebox at work. It's actually got some great songs on it. Actually, some surprisingly good music in this game. But it only happens if you turn on the jukebox or a radio. So anyway, you're going to want to walk to the back of the walk-in cooler, grab some bags of frozen fries, nuggets for the fryer. And from here, you're just waiting on customers to give you their order at the register. Then you make the food, you put it in the bag, you close the bag, and you throw the whole bag right at the customer to signify to them that their order is ready. This is how you get the customer to go away. You throw their food at them right at their head. They either catch it, or they pick it up off the ground, and then they leave without either of you having to say anything. I wish we'd known this back in my day. Wish we'd known this was the right way to do it.
Just throw it at the fucking head.
They get
probably would have lasted over more than a year at Jack in the Box, knowing that.
Yeah, it's really going to get your efficiency up. So while you're making food and you're filling orders, different scary atmospheric things are going to keep happening to you that could scare you, distract you, maybe set you back with time with food you're cooking. If you get an order wrong, like you that somebody didn't want pickles on their burger and you put pickles on it, a horrible monster will try to attack you. It's really terrifying. You probably will die. You probably won't escape, so don't get orders wrong. Every day you go to work, things get a little more complicated. I was at work today, keeping it humble, flipping some burgers. The grill caught on fire. First, I'm running around, wondering what do I do? I thought maybe the customers would leave because the restaurant was catching on fire. No. They didn't. They're all still waiting for their burgers, giving me the evil eye. They're like, what's taking us so long? So then I find this switch in the back that says sprinklers, and I'm like, thank God, this has got to be it. I flip the switch. Sprinklers start going all over the restaurant. Grill is finally no longer on fire. I get back to cooking, fill a couple orders. The grill catches on fire again. It's like this has never happened to me before today. I played it all weekend. But, you know, I know where the sprinkler switch is now. So I walk over to it. I flip it. But then an alert comes on letting me know that water's not free, buddy. And you've already used all the water you can use for today.
Oh, God.
I'm like, what? There's no other using water in the game but the sprinkler. So you get one sprinkler per shift. And then you just have to be in the restaurant that's on fire. So I'm over here figuring it out. I'm like, what do I do now? Do I keep cooking with the grill, even though it's on fire? I tried everything. The answer turned out to be yes. The solution is just get over it, keep working next to the fire. I had to grab patties, throw them onto the grill in the fire, pull them out of the fire when they're done, and just keep moving. It turns out if I just ignored the fire from the beginning, since it wasn't going to matter if I put it out anyway, I could have just not run the sprinklers to begin with and just suffered. I'd have made better cooking times with the food, and the customers wouldn't have gotten so upset to begin with. And if you've ever worked for a restaurant, a fast food restaurant, or any restaurant, you know I was not kidding when I said this is a very realistic food simulation game. This game was no doubt made by somebody who worked these jobs. It felt so real to me. You know, I haven't played a lot of stuff like Five Nights at Freddy's, but I'm familiar with it, and I know this game is super influenced by games like that in that game. If you're wondering if this game is really jump scare heavy, I'd say there are going to be like a couple, but that's definitely not the action this game's built around or anything. This game's a lot deeper than you might think something like this game can be. There's plenty of secrets. You know, we already talked about how it's first-person open world. There's a strong, scary plot going on behind the scenes, even other than the dystopian horror we open up with. There's a lot of stuff like in Bioshock Infinite, you can kind of walk around collecting recordings and, like, learning more about the world. You can find stuff like that in this game, little pieces of literature to read, little cassettes you can plug in to, like, get a little more of the story. And stuff's pretty messed up. That's all I'm going to say. If you like dystopian horror type satire stuff, if you loved the in-world branding that Fallout had with the 50s styling and the radio stations, the lore, the creepy toys you can find, if you like that 50s Pip-Boy all-American art style that Fallout's known for, you're really going to like the atmosphere of this game. Really, really similar stylistically to that. Definitely heavily influenced by the whole Fallout franchise world building, everything they've got going on. When you're done with work, you can walk around the city, go into a coffee shop, a bar, mess with vending machines. There's strip malls of stores you can go into. There's a hospital. I'm not sure what that does yet. You can collect placeable items in town with the money you made at work to decorate your shitty little apartment with. Yeah, you can buy coffee. You can buy alcohol to really take the edge off from a hard day at work, or put the edge back on if you're low energy or on your way to work. Yeah, there's just a lot going on in this one.
Nice. So it's sitting at $20. What are your thoughts?
Oof. If any of it sounds good to you, it's not a try it, it's a buy it. Some people hate atmospheric horror games. I get it. Some people hate cooking games. Some people hate assembly type resource management games, life sim games. A lot of people don't like resource management when it's first person. Some people just really hate intentionally gross and off-putting stuff, even if the designers are trying to do that to you. This game's definitely not for anybody. For everybody, but the people it's for, it's really, really, really for them. I can't think of any other atmospheric horror cooking games. I can't think of any fast food job life sims, even without the horror elements. It's super its own thing. I think it's really not only going for what it's going for, but it's pulling it off. That's not easy to do stylistically for something this specific. This game's a really, really specific vision someone had, and I have a couple complaints. I think the tutorial really needs work. I know that's been my theme all night, but I really think it in this game. They just dump you in. They don't really teach you the controls. They really need a copywriter bad. Outside of stuff like that, this game is already really bringing it. And it's definitely unique.
Unique.
Any of this sounds good to you, take it from me. I'm your resident McDonald's goth. This shit is McDonald's, and I am loving it.
Oh my god, please put that on the back of a box or something. This shit is McDonald's.
There you go, Tiny Build. Put that on the website. This shit is McDonald's, and I'm loving it. All right, next game to talk about is Castle on the Coast, developed by Big Heart Productions, published by Klebaiter, released December 2nd on Xbox One, Switch, and PC for $14.99. A hand-drawn retro 3D collectathon parkour through a magic castle as George the Giraffe string together sweet moves to explore crystal caverns, stone-laden halls, and trippy alternate dimensions. Chris, tell us about Castle on the Coast.
All right, Castle on the Coast. Well, this is a this is going to make a lot of us Nintendo 64 kids quite happy, I think, and like maybe kids in general. So this is a game about said castle where there used to be a bunch of wizards that lived there, and then something happened, and all the wizards kind of left, and nobody knows where they are. Left behind are some like are a few of the wizards who are like little kids, and I guess there's these other little kids that live there too, like orphans and whatnot. And the little kid wizards are just like huge jerks to these other kids, and so you stumble into this castle and are charged with kind of confronting these wizards and seeing if you can maybe try and convince them to be less mean to the other children. You, by the way, are George. You're a giraffe. So you are running all around this castle and its surrounding environments and internal, like, magical landscapes. And basically, you're trying to collect four thingies so that you can get to the final area and get this confrontation done. And so the pathway to getting to those thingies is actually this totally open world that is weirdly, like, stitched together really well. Like, you know, you don't often go to different scenes. You actually just go to different places in the castle, and it just opens up into this whole big old world that you don't have to, like, actually load in, which is pretty nice. Especially considering that the game was a little janky as far as, like, frame rate goes at first. I was a little concerned about this, but it turns out there's just a couple areas that kind of, you know, slow it down a bit, it being a Switch game. It's also on Steam, though, so can't speak to that.
And Xbox, but I haven't played one.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's a feature of the game or just the Switch, you know, slowing it down. But either way, so this is a 3D platformer where, again, you're playing as the bouncing giraffe named George, who is a silent protagonist, and, you know, as giraffes often are. And and also, his name is George. I was like, why is his name not Jeffrey? Why is there a giraffe that is not named Jeffrey? This does not make sense.
It might be a legal thing.
Right, yeah. I'm like, somebody has taken the Jeffrey away from these people by force, I can just tell. Anyway, so it's a 3D collectathon, which is, you know, a subgenre of the 3D platformer made very popular in the Nintendo 64 era by games like Banjo-Kazooie and Donkey Kong 64. All 64 of them. You're running around platforms, getting into areas that, you know, are high up, out of the way, hidden away, all kinds of, you know, all kinds of stuff. Like, in order to collect, basically, they're star keys. And they, you know, there's also flowers that are in these, like, laser cubes and stuff. Like, they're very bright and colorful. Everything in this game is bright and colorful, by the way, but they actually stand out. And, like, you just collect everything. The star keys are for getting into new areas. You have to collect a certain amount of them to open doors. And again, you can do it in any order, so it doesn't actually matter. Sometimes you have to do like a little puzzle or a task to get into a new area, but they're really easy. That's going to be a theme for this game. But anyways, you can also collect, like I said, the flowers in laser cubes, and those are a kind of currency that you can use. Like, think of them as like bananas in Donkey Kong. You know, they're there to collect, and you can spend them on different costumes, but costumes with a question mark, because you actually become like, it'll be like, this is a costume of Michael, this kid over here. But like when you change costumes, you just become Michael. You're no longer a giraffe. You're a kid called Michael. And like, who wants that? I don't know. But poor, you know, I mean, yeah, poor Michael. I mean, he seems like a cool guy. But so there's a couple of things that kind of make this one stand out, though, because I've reviewed a couple of these collect-a-thon style games. Often I'm not impressed, usually because they become too difficult, too obtuse, or just not fun enough. This game actually avoids all that by being kind of broken. It's so it's got really floaty controls, right? Okay. It's also got like a double jump, of course, and spin attack, of course, obviously, and also like wall running, which is very ninja-esque. That's I kind of like that I have a ninja ref. anyway.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Most stuff in this game, like, you'd think, okay, I have to, like, figure out, like, a series of platforms to get over to this, like, one flower that I want to gather up, you know, because I got to collect them all. But it's, like, actually, I could just, like, bounce off this wall, like, shimmy up this side of this wall, and just, like, bounce. Yeah, you can actually, like, create your own paths to getting these hard-to-reach places, and I love that, because you can just mess around in this game and finish it. On top of that, for no reason at all, seemingly, they give you, like, sometimes they will actually give you, like, a cutscene to introduce, oh, here's a car, now you can, drive it through these rings and run over 30-foot-tall chickens, not even kidding, and try to collect some stuff that way. But, like, when you're outside, in the coast part of the castle on the coast, you can jump into the ocean, which is gorgeous, by the way. It's a super cool-looking ocean. And you can, like, get in there and just find a submarine and start driving it around. You don't need that submarine. It does help you breathe underwater for longer, because you can't breathe underwater, obviously. And it does keep you protected from the sharks. Which, by the way, if a shark grabs onto George and starts, like, you know, like, eating him, essentially. Like, you have four hearts, right? So you have, you know, you take damage and can die, but it's such a non-thing. Because it just, you just wake up in whatever checkpoint, and you don't lose a single thing. You just keep going. But when they chew him and like start, you know, dragging him around, it makes squeaky toy sounds. I'm like, I love this. Anyways, so yeah, it just, they drop in these little fun things for you to do. And by the way, the submarine is equipped with infinite missiles, and you can take out those sharks, of course, before they take you out. Fucking no sharks. Problem. Yeah, exactly. And it's just, the game is all about, it's not about levels, it's not about challenge, because, you know, you have your spin attack can take out anything, and they don't throw a lot at you, honestly. They throw the occasional Goomba-style enemy that will slowly approach. Sometimes they just run away from you, and you can, like, bump them off if you choose, like the frogs in the library. But it's just, like, it's so bright and colorful. Like, I invite people to like look up like video or screenshots of this game to just see how like saturated like the colors, and like it's a kaleidoscope of like these set pieces that are just crammed together and make no sense, but you're running in them and you're just like, you know, it doesn't matter, you're just running around having fun, and like I said, eventually collecting these things, which is nice, and that'll eventually get you out. The other thing as well, you know, talking about the janky floaty physics that actually serve the game, the voice acting is so charming because it's not that good, but it's very sincere. All the kids are voice acted, and some of them have the most hilarious, like...
Whoa, typing, that was loud.
Some of them have the most hilarious, like, quirks, like, and stuff, and, like, the way they stutter through their lines and stuff. It's kind of like Rick and Morty if it was good-natured. Because this game is very good-natured. In fact, I would say, like, the target audience for this game is kids. Like, kids who would have, you know, been a little younger than you and me, but, you know, like, would have grown up on, like, Banjo-Kazooie or some N64 kind of game. Like, this is, like, the spiritual successor to those types of things, but they figured out how to make it fun without burdening people with, you know, that European nonsense of, like, challenge.
Nice. Well, it's sitting at $14.99 on the Switch and PC. I mentioned it was on Xbox. There's a demo on Xbox, but the game isn't out there yet. That'll be in the future. But Switch and PC right now, $15. What do you think?
So this is a very fun romp. It's a short game and not very challenging. So I recommend it to people who just want to cut loose and have a good like time in this weirdly psychedelic, like super charming, cute game for, you know, a few hours. Like it looks like it tops out at about 3 hours, I'd say. I'd recommend it for them. I'm going to personally like recommend this to my sister for my nieces, because they always are looking for new games, and I think this would be right up their alley.
Nice.
I definitely think this is a great game for kids, because it's not going to frustrate a kid that can't figure out how to do things, you know? So, yeah, absolutely a buy it for like a family situation, or just a person who just wants to have fun with something lighthearted and not at all serious, but also not bad.
Cool. Sounds good.
There you go.
All right, next up is Collapse, developed by Glaive Games, published by Overgames, released December 10th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Collapsed is a post-apocalyptic roguelike action platformer. Hunt your prey through vast procedurally generated levels filled with tough enemies, useful loot, and experience points. Yay! Purnell, tell us about Collapsed.
This will be a quick one, so you'll love it. Collapse is a procedurally generated roguelike type game, though I guess roguelike is loosely, because when you die, you don't lose your stuff, which is actually kind of nice. At the beginning of the game, you choose one of four characters. Each of those characters has a unique melee attack and a unique firearm. I know, right?
I couldn't unmute in time.
A unique weapon and a unique fire. For example, one character's melee attack may be like a scythe that's used to form a ring around them and attack, whereas another might use a lance or a pike, which can be used to thrust out of like in any of the like eight directions or whatever. So like more of a shield versus just like a piercing. And as you explore these environments, you're tasked with killing everything in sight using one of those two types of attacks and locating the true, quote unquote, true portal. Each area has multiple portals on it, and when you go up to them and try to open them up, monsters will spew forth from inside of them. You have to kill them using your weaponry or evade them using your dash attack or your dash ability. Some of these guys take more damage than others, like spongy damage. When you kill them, they can give you hearts that will heal you. Also, a green tank refill. I have no idea what the stuff is actually called, but it is a carryable item that's always in your possession that can be used to restore health outside in lieu of finding health items on the ground. But when you deplete it, you have to find new, you know, dropped items that will restore it. And lastly, you can, and from enemies and also from treasure chests, you can find equipable items, or rather equipable buffs or tweaks to your gear. You have a weapon, you have armor, and you have a gun, and each of those things can equip up to three different accessories. And there's also two like sub abilities that you can like press like Y or X to trigger them. The weird bonus, the awesome thing to this is that there's a lot of different loot you can find. All the different loot items that can be equipped to these things have various, you know, perks, like, you know, min damage increase or max damage increase or bonus damage done to enemies caught on fire by your weapon or whatever. The downside to these things is you find a lot of these things with these very lengthy dialogued perks and buffs that you have to read through every time you find it. And you can only equip three items per weapon or per, you know, equipment type, which seems like a lot, except you don't get to do it that often, because you'll fill it up very fast and you'll be spending way too much time reading through the equipment drops to be like, is this better than that? Is this better than that? And when you're playing a game that's already primarily built around anything like bullet hell dodging, you know, slashing, shooting gameplay, having to stop for every loot drop to see if it's better than your previous one is kind of annoying. Eventually I get to the point where I'll go through like a level or two, pick up all my loot and just ignore it until later. And then I'll just decide if I care about this or not. Also, it's worth picking it up even if you don't care about reading it, because eventually you'll come across spaces in the areas where you can craft new items by sacrificing stuff you've already dropped found on the ground to get new things. So all those junk items you didn't want to read, who cares? Just dump them in, consider purchased items from a shop or currency for a shop. At the end of each zone, if, well, correction, you're looking through for the true portal.
if you find the true portal after you kill all the enemies that spew forth them, you can move forward to the next environment. If it's the fake portal, you'll get a bunch of loot and have to keep searching. Eventually, one of those portals will lead you to the area boss. Kill it after a bullet hell dance fest, and you will get a ton of new loot, then you can move on to the next zone.
Yay.
When you die eventually, though, it's like zone dashing, baby. When you die, you will get spawned back to the main hub environment where you can take the items you had and put them in storage, or you can spend the, I guess it's like Ethereum or whatever they called it, on a grid that can be used to upgrade your character for, like, you know, like various elemental damages or buffs or whatnot. But also, you can also unlock new items that can show up on future runs, which is nice. The funny thing about this is that the upgrades you earn are shared across all the different characters you find, but you can't switch between characters within the hub itself. You have to actually load up the file, save file, with a different character. So it's not a killer or anything like that, because it's simple going back to the main menu. But, you'll find yourself wanting to just be able to select the guy immediately and just get going with it or whatever, but you can't. So, at the end of the day, it's funny, because the gameplay, I mean, I wasn't really drawn to the world or anything, and I wasn't being like, oh, wow, that enemy looks really cool, that enemy looks really cool. But when the game got going, I was actually very much engaged with dodging enemies, letting off that fire spray, reloading my ammo, because your gun ammo is limited, but you can find drops from enemies. I was engaged with that entire loop, despite the fact that I found myself being like, it's okay, nothing particular, you know, special here. But it was enjoyable once I was in the thrill of it all, in the seat of it. I just wish I gave two craps about the loot, because, again, too much loot for the slots you get, and there's a lot of dialogue or a lot of descriptives related to numbers and percents, which I get. Loot games, that's kind of an MO, but I don't remember having this much grief with Diablo somehow.
When you're playing something with loot, you got to keep it simple. Like, show me green if it's better, show me red if it's worse, so I know whether or not I should mess with it. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Simplify that. Keep it simple, stupid. Just KISS method all the way.
That's right. And I will say that they do the whole thing, like, on the numbers on the left, where it's like it'll have like the numbers there. But I mean, at one point I found the item, it had like a compound equation. I was like, the hell is this crap? And I was like, I don't even know why you did that. But it doesn't let you like compare the equipment. So it's kind of like, ugh, that sucks. That's a really big need. Because like you said, if I find a thing, I want to put the two together. Give me some red, give me some green. Boom, that's better. Toss it. Just let me keep moving. I ain't got time for this. I got guns. Pew, pew.
Speaking of not having time, we've been going way too long with this shit. $15. What do you think collapsed?
Tim's rolling over in his grave right now.
Everyone's Hello, going so long tonight, and I don't know why. Everyone's just talking so long.
And I literally said this would be a short one. I think I was just screwing with you.
Son of a bitch.
For now, I almost spit my soda out.
My work here is done. I give this honestly a buy. I mean, I try it, because it's not, even though I have my gripes about it, like I said, in the midst of the gameplay, I was still enjoying myself, but the game is not broken. It's functional, and the characters are distinct enough that you'll bounce around them as you decide who's your favorite. It's just, there's a lot of games like this out there, too, so definitely try it.
Cool. All right, next up, Justice Chronicles, developed by Hitpoint, published by Kemco, released December 3rd, Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows 10 for $14.99. In a world on the brink of war, a newly acquainted duo must fight destiny itself in order to save the world from ever-creeping darkness that is threatening to consume everything and once and for all restore the balance of the world. Chris, tell us about Justice Chronicles.
Okay, so Justice Chronicles is another in a long line of Kemco RPGs. However, I've mentioned this, you know, every time, this is one that is made by Hitpoint rather than XCreate. This is very important for RPG fans who only want to play good RPGs. I'm just kidding. No, I personally prefer Hitpoint RPGs to XCreate RPGs in the Kemco family, because the XCreate ones tend to really follow the same formula pretty much every time. And while the formula is good, it can come across as being this kind of junk food RPG that, you know, it's good, but not substantial. So with this game, Justice Chronicles, this is actually one of their earliest games being remade 5 years later. At this point, they had just done like Machine Knight and Bonds of the Skies, both of which I've reviewed before. But this is one of the pair of like more kind of Super Nintendo style, like upgraded games that came out after I think they hit it big with Neko Atsume Kitty Collector, if you remember that mobile game. Because that's the other thing that Hit Point did was the Neko Atsume game.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, this one follows right after Chronos Arc, and this is before they got into doing stuff like Legend of the Tetrarchs and Monster Viator and Crystal Orta and other games you're never going to remember the names of, much less spell them. But I love those last three games that I just listed, and this game is kind of the bridge between they're more, I'm not going to say generic, but let's say follows the typical JRPG formula. It's the bridge between that they started with like Bonds in the Skies, and ended up with like Crystal Orta, which is a great game. So yeah, you play as perpetually peppy protagonist, whose name I just forgot because it's not right in front of me.
Klein,
thank you. I've already forgotten it, but thank you. So he, you know, he's part of the surface world kingdom of, you know, people who live where there is a sun, and they go underground to like, you know, kind of spy on one of the underground tribes because there's political tension there, and they're also like trying to investigate some other stuff like having to do with story. It's all story. He gets separated from his team and ends up meeting one of the battle priestesses of one of the underground tribes, and they kind of form a shaky alliance. But then they fall into a hole, and she is almost killed. And he wakes up, and he's like, "No, something bad happened in my past where somebody was killed, and I don't like it when people die. So I'll do anything to save this person that I..." Yeah, same, right. "I'll do anything to save this person that, you know, I will sacrifice my own life to save this lady that I just met, although she is kind of hot." And, he is in luck because the actual god of death is right there within earshot, and he's like, he appears as this giant 20-foot dragon made of smoke and cinders, and is like, "Hey, buddy, heard you're wanting to make a deal. Tell you what, if I get to take your life, that means I get to be free, and in exchange, I will save this girl's life, and then I'll take your life at some other time." And he was like, "All right, that sounds good. Nothing bad could happen there." And so, yeah, the god of death spares the lady's life, who is now indebted to Klein, and thus becomes kind of a... They eventually form a friendship, and I'm not going to go too much into that. And then also, the god of death is now following around Klein as kind of a battle partner. They call him, like... It's like the Harry Potter Patroni thing, whatever. Actually, it is called Partona, so it's like the same letters practically. And turns out, like, a lot of characters in this game have Partonas, and so, you know, you gather up characters, and you also gather up their mystical beasties, and get through the battles and stuff, and mechanically, that ends up becoming, like, this really cool thing of, like, you get to kind of build up certain attacks, and also depending on your relationship with your Partona, you can unleash like these unique combo attacks. There's also combo attacks between party members. There's all kinds of stuff. That's very much like a system that lives on in your Crystal Orthos and Monster Viators. Except in this one, instead of like all of your skill points being based on a timer within the battle, it's actually like consumable, like HP and MP. That is, and you have to actually heal yourself and refresh yourself between battles, which is something that they've recently done away with, to my great delight. That dinosaur is still in this game. And yeah, beyond that, it's the same kind of deal of like, you know, you get weapons, you can improve your weapons right in the menu, but instead of just spending money like you do nowadays, you actually have to find like materials in the dungeons and stuff. But yeah, so there's a lot of little systems to like improve your characters and make them super powered so that you can raise the difficulty level and, you know, really challenge yourself. This is one of those games that starts off real easy and eventually gets pretty hard, and then it has another difficulty level on top of that. And because this is an old game, it does not have downloadable wins. Like, you can't just download triple experience or double your attack or anything like that. It actually has no DLC whatsoever.
Yes, it does. Yep, it has triple experience, double damage, and magic meteorite growth times 3.
Well, okay, I'm wrong then. I didn't see it in the menu because this game it came out on the 3DS in 2016, and I've played them side by side. They're the exact same game all the way down to the menus. It's just they're not split up into two screens anymore, so like the map is on the main screen and stuff. So yeah, I guess that's why I didn't actually see it in the menus. Yeah, it must be in the actual
shop. Possible they're menu. Not like calling it out explicitly like in some of the other games, but yeah, the DLC is definitely still there.
Okay, well, there's DLC if then you want for people it. Who. Yeah, I've actually bought some of that before for some of the other games, so that's me being a sucker, I guess. Anyway, the main draw of this game and the main thing that people should know about this game, it has much better art than other games that you would see the Kemco label on. Like, I really love the style that it's got that style of like the later games, like I said, Legend of the Tetrarchs, Monster Viator, Crystal Orta, where it's like the enemy sprites are like these big sprites made up of several sprites, so it's got all these moving parts, and they look really cool, especially like big old bosses. Music is fantastic, and this one has a very, very intriguing story. Like, there's twists and turns at every place. Like, it's a genuinely fascinating story. It's not just, four people meet up and, defeat evil or whatever. So, yeah, that's Justice Chronicles for you.
Cool. $15. What's your verdict?
Yeah, this one is more worth it than the usual Kemco fare, in my opinion. I bought it back on the 3DS when it came out, actually right after I started reviewing Kemco games. I was like, well, there's two that I don't have yet because I haven't reviewed them, so I'm just going to buy them. And this was one of those two. And I didn't play it too much, but I'm really glad I actually made a few hours of progress into this one. And ultimately, it's a 40-hour game, just like their newer ones. It actually is, its length belies its mobile RPG nature as it is. So I'm going to call it a buy it.
Cool. I bought it. I love the Kemco games. I will buy fucking all of them because so far I have.
Nice.
And the HD like upgrade to the graphics is so welcome after the 3DS. It's very grainy on 3DS, and it has like this whole anime like intro and stuff with a song and everything, and it's just like it's so nice to see that without that compression now. I love it.
Oh man. All right, we got one more to talk about. That's called Sleepin' Guy Deluxe Edition, developed and published by Chubby Pixel, released December 3rd on Xbox One for $8.99. Sleepin' Guy Deluxe Edition is a first-person action puzzle game set in a physics-based world. You'll assume the role of a nice big guy that will need to wake up in order to save the most important thing in his life. Purnell, tell us about Sleepin' Guy Deluxe Edition.
Okay, so I am strangely torn on this game. So the idea of Sleeping Guy is that his most important thing is his beer. Let's just get that out of the way. Man loves his beer. He's asleep.
I thought you said beard, because that's pretty important too with this guy.
Well, let's be honest. Yeah, that's probably the second most important thing to him.
That's just it's beards me are very important in this game. To big guys. It's me in the game. Yeah. It is me. It's just that's definitely me in the game. I should file for copyright.
Sleeping Joe. Just
the beer. He has more hair than me, but otherwise, yeah, that's me.
Hey, I can share in that plight. I mourn for my lost hair follicles. Come back, friends. I miss you. We had so many. Anyway, enough about me waxing youthfulness. Sleeping Guy is about a guy who's asleep. He's in the process of dropping his beer, and my man's got to wake up because he needs to get his drink on, and also, I guess, save his carpet if he cares about that. And what ends up happening is, in order to wake up, he has to, for whatever reason, kill himself in many different ways in various stages. Like, that is the game. Like, the idea is that you are walking around an environment, and this environment offers you a variety of stages that you can enter and play. So, initially, the first level I entered was like a train set that was on a table. And it was like, click to enter level. I was like, okay, I entered the stage. And I went in, and I'm walking through a train car. I hit a lever to go up on top of the car, and I'm trying to figure out where to go next. You know, typical games, you're like, okay, I got to walk around. I got to find, but maybe get to the front of the train and stop it. That'll wake me up. But
every time I just kept falling off the train. And when I fell off the train, I didn't know what to do next. I was looking around, like, is there another thing to do? And eventually, I just walked on the tracks, and boom, I got hit by a train, and I died. And I woke up. That was the stage. The stage was literally get out of the train and get hit by it. I was like, okay, that's weird. And then the next level was something similar. And I'm not going to keep going into the descriptions because that gives the game itself away. But essentially, you're going to different spaces and dying. And every level has like a weird like element to it where it's like, okay, they're coming up with weirder and weirder ways for you to like have to take yourself out. And it's like such a weird thing. Because on one hand, I've never really played a game where that was the goal. But I guess it kind of works in that capacity. Like, okay, I mean, that's usually how people wake up in their dreams. Though why this guy is somehow super resilient for waking up, he's got to do it multiple times. I have no idea. You should call him Super Sleeping Guy. Maybe Mario in terms, I don't know. But so
I do want to give a shout out that they changed the name of the game. The game is originally known as Suicide Guy. And yeah, I think right, it's a much better guy call to name it Sleeping Guy. Just, you know.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was never a big fan of the name of the game.
I concur. And honestly, I'll be blunt. That was a part of why I originally was kind of like hazy about it up until I was like, maybe that's why they tried to do the change they did, because the idea of a game where you're killing yourself, I'm not too fond of that. But I do get them wrapping it around the concept of you're asleep and you're trying to wake yourself up, because I can't speak for everybody else in this podcast, but I have had dreams where I'm like, I got to get up. And there's only two ways you can do it. Get really happy or die in the dream, because or falling forever. But I don't, that's a weird one in and of itself. But essentially, I get the logic behind it. So I can't be like, nah, it's just bullshit. No, that's sleep logic 101 right there.
Yeah.
So I get that. But the one thing that did mess with me is that, and this is where I said it gets a little mixed up, is that some levels have like pretty interesting mechanics for like how to get through the stage, where you might be like, okay, it's not complicated, but I can kind of feel myself being engaged with the idea of like, okay, how am I going to get out of this one? Okay, how am I going to get out of this one? Got to use these blocks and crawl, jump across these platforms. But then there are some that are just going for too long. And the best example of this, as much as I suck, I hate that I've been giving this away, but I think it's important to convey this to me or to the listeners, is that I got to one level that was a straight up Super Mario Brothers, like, oh my, hey, this is like the Mushroom Kingdom. It was like wacky question blocks and like a dead piranha plant, because obviously piranha plants were alive. They'd eat you, you'd wake up. But so they were like dead piranha plants and you're trying to figure out how to wake up. But for as lengthy as the level was, the majority of it was like taking question blocks from the sky and walking them places and letting them go. And eventually you got to the point where you had to have like two or three of them to cross a platform or cross a ravine. But to get them there, you had to grab a block, move it all the way over the room to that side of the stage, then leave and come all the way back to find the second one and move it all the way back. And then when it came time to use those same question blocks on another thing on the same stage, you had to go grab all those question blocks you found over there, one at a time, move them all the way over to the other side of the map to do that thing. And I was like, it's kind of weak. Like, that's kind of weak puzzle solving there. Like, I get it. Moving blocks from one place to another, that's not engaging and it's time wasting in that sense. But at the same time, there's other levels where I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I can see that being pretty fun.
If it helps at all, I think this is a remake or re-release of the very first game in the series. So that might be why some of the mechanics are more simplistic as opposed to some of the later releases.
That makes sense. Then, yeah, like the later levels, some of the other levels might be like, oh, this is pretty cool. And that one's like, oh, this is totally from the old style. In that case, I get. And there's like 32 stages or so in this game, too. So you'll get a fair bit of gameplay out of this if you like the concept of it. So, and also, as far as collectibles in the game go, there aren't a ton, but each level has one statue that you can find that gets set on the table. And I'm wagering they unlock the bonus levels that are existent in the game. Because when I went to finally check the bonus level zone, three were unlocked and three weren't, which gave me the impression they must have gotten unlocked by all the statues I was finding. So, all in all, I would say that you're not going to be mentally taxed by this game in any way. But at the same time, I will say it's kind of nifty to go to, like, you know, like, where are they going to, what weird set pieces are they going to set up next? What set pieces are they going to set up next? How am I going to get out of this jam? And that was something I kind of enjoyed about going to each in respective level in this game. So, but with that said, even with the name change and the theming change, if you don't really feel comfortable with the idea of literally finding ways to kill yourself in a game, do not pick this game up, because the dream concept won't mask that vibe if you have, if you're kind of skeeved out by it in the first place. So that is my warning to players.
Otherwise, as it stands, it's $9 bucks. What do you think of it?
Solid try. And Joe's like, yes, stop it.
It's been over 2 hours.
It's been 64 years.
Show Me still has another 20 minutes with Glenn Case to do a Monster Rancher review. So,
nice.
Like, the show's still not over yet. You fuckers still got to put up with more. But, yeah, that's it for the party cast portion. Big thanks to Will Brierley for coming on and chatting about Nude Volleyball. Game's fucked up, people. Go check it out. Comes out Friday. Yeah, it's fucked up.
And stick around for that Monster Rancher review, because, folks, I want to know how that one goes. So,
well, they'll find out right now.
Now.
All right, moving on. We got one final game to talk about tonight, and we are bringing in our good friend Glenn Case. Glenn, how are you doing?
You know, I'm $10,000 richer, so that's good.
I heard you're $10,000 poorer now.
Well, that's true. I've pretty much spent it all I was going to say booze and drugs, but no, it really was debt and a few fun things, though. I got the Forza Horizon 5 Ultimate Edition, so there's that.
Worth it. Did you get the treasure map, too?
I did not get the treasure map, because part of it, to me, is I love the exploration, and I don't want to spoil that part for me.
Treasure map is the first thing I do, just because I want to get all the travel, the fast travel boards, so I can get free fast travel anywhere I want to go, and then I want to get the house that lets you fast travel anywhere. That way,
totally fair.
I don't have to drive 400 miles to get to an event when I just want to get to a friggin' race.
See, but then half of the fun for me is having Rachel play, who's not a gamer, and she, quote-unquote, goes rogue, which is basically just, like, going through the fields and plowing through fences, and in one case, really being excited when she was able to go head-on with a train. She yelled out, I win!
Because
she went head-on with the train. So, like, that's part of the fun. It's like, yeah, no, let's do all of that driving. Let's see what you find while you're driving here, babe.
Speaking of winning, you won. We chatted about it on the show. Me, Jacob, and Aki, we talked about it when it happened. But you're a big winner in a contest recently, huh?
It's a first. Well, I don't know if it's a first, but I certainly didn't go into the Everybody Loves Chowder song thinking that I was going to win. I just thought, I'm going to try to make this as good as I can. I'm going to try to make it a fun song. And then I was really concerned with about a minute and 26 seconds left. It looked like my submission had not gone in.
Ooh.
Like the YouTube link said that it had already been used. So I'm guessing I hit submit twice is probably what ended up happening. But I wasn't, I was concerned because I didn't get like a thing that confirmed it. So I was kind of bummed. And I went and because I wasn't sure, I'm like, well, I'm probably not going to win anyway. So I'm going to go take a bath. And I was in the bath, and that's when I got the text, which I conducted my phone call from the bath.
Sweet.
So there you go. That's a little bit of inside information that no one else had heard up until now. And now nice. It's just you and
we got the exclusive details here on SML.
There you go. And I'm partially like testing, like, is this real or did someone find my information and are they just like punking me on this?
It fits with the theme of the episode, because earlier in the show we had the developer of Nude Men's Beach Retired Volleyball League.
Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah.
That sounds adventurous. There's a good way to put that.
It is crazy. It'll be out later this week on Steam. You'll have to keep your eyes open for it. It is.
And I'll keep my ears open to know whether it was a buy it or not.
Yeah. You'll find out soon.
Yes. Although I guess your listeners already know.
They know, but you don't.
Yeah, it's true. So that
we're going to find out what you do know. Because you got a game to talk about.
I do. And I'm so excited. I've been wanting to tell people about it, and I've not, because reasons. But Monster Rancher 1 and 2 DX for the Nintendo Switch.
Yes, let us get into this one. I'll give all the details. Like Glenn said, Monster Rancher 1 and 2 DX, developed and published by Koei Tecmo Games. It released December 9th on Switch and Steam for $29.99. The legendary Monster Training duology Monster Rancher and Monster Rancher 2 is back. That's all the info they gave us. So, Glenn, tell us, what is this game?
For anyone who doesn't know, people these days might end up calling it the Wish.com version of Pokemon on the PlayStation. That was what it was back in the day. Truth be told, I spent countless hours on these games, the first two especially. So I'm thrilled that these are the ones that they remade, because like I spent so much time specifically for one reason. When you were playing this on the PlayStation, you would have any of your music CDs contains a monster. And you would, like, each monster would have, you know, life, power, defense, strength, skill. And I was just mesmerized by that, because we had a massive music collection. So I had to know what was on every CD in the house. I had, instead of using like an Excel spreadsheet, I had printed out spreadsheets in binders where I'm like, okay, this is monster number one. And these three CDs have this one, but this one's the strongest. And like, this is monster number 52. Like, if you want a tiger that is yellow, then you can go with this guy here. And I've got these five CDs that have this monster on it. Like, it was utterly ridiculous.
So you went all out with these games back when they first came out.
In the biggest of ways, for sure. And one of the first things I had to know is, how on earth are they going to replace the CD portion of this? Because obviously there's no CD player for the Nintendo Switch. And the answer is, they have a gigantic database where you would put in a CD. You now put either the title of the CD or the artist name for the CD. And
how many CDs are in the database?
I could not tell you for sure, but it's a lot. And there's a lot of them I haven't heard of, but there's plenty that I wanted to check to see if they had ones from my personal collection. And like, even Adele, you look up Adele, she's not in there. But you have these random artists that are just obscure as hell that I've definitely never heard of. And they are in there. It's a very bizarre database. And the first thing I would say is, if Tecmo wants to approach me, I will happily provide you with like CD information or whatever you need, so we can beef that database up. There's plenty that's in there already, but there's a lot of stuff that's missing. And so that was one part that was a little bit of a letdown. But the crazy part of it is that even in when you and you can choose a random one too. So if you don't know which CD you want to choose, you hit the random button and it just picks a random one.
And that's helpful, like, for people with decision paralysis.
Yeah, if you have decision paralysis, just hit, you know, and if you want just something chaotic, then just hit that button and boom, it'll come up. One of the other things back in the day when I was playing these games that was especially interesting is you'd have, because again, we had such a large database of it, I discovered that there was a certain number of what you would call normal monsters, but then they programmed special monsters to only be recognized when you put a specific CD in. So back in the day, at least, there was only one CD in existence that would give you a dragon.
Oh.
And that dragon would be found on REM's album Monster.
Ah, fitting. That makes sense.
So incredibly fitting. And I know for a fact that they had to have been thinking of this stuff, because another one was the album by The Clash, Combat Rock. It's called Combat Rock, and your monster's called a tank. And it's a worm ? And it's camouflage in color.
All right, now, you mentioned the dragon with REM. Did they add anything from Dragon Force to the library, and do they give dragons?
I'd have to double check to see at this point in time, because here's the other bit of it, though, is I did notice that not all, well, right there in their CD thing, they say that the monsters you're expecting are not necessarily going to be on the discs anymore. And ooh. I discovered this firsthand, because I started going back through my CD database and I checked some of them against it to see. Are the monsters, like, if you grew up and you used a specific CD, are you going to be able to use that same CD and get the same monster? And the answer is almost definitely no. So you're starting from scratch on that. Like, if you expected to get a specific tiger from a CD, that ain't probably not going to happen anymore.
So your notes are outdated now.
Yes, they are.
Years of research. No!
Down the toilet. But there is the exception of the ones that are super special, like REM's Monster. It does still give you a dragon. Teenage Fan Club's album Grand Prix, which was one of only two music CDs that would give you what was called a disc monster, still gives you a disc monster that happens to be called a radial and looks like a tire. The album's called Grand Prix. There's a car on the cover. Again, this is clearly intentional on their part. NXS's album Kick still gives you a monster called a goal, and it's a soccer ball.
Nice.
So, like, specifically the super special monsters seem to be more or less the same, which makes sense because, you know, but the difference is I had to go out and buy these albums in order to get them. And we were so obsessed with it that I went out and bought CDs of music that I did not know because they had special monsters on them.
Wow, that's dedication.
It was, and it turned out that in many of those cases, they became favorite albums just on a whim. Like, it just happened to be really decent discs, too. So, you know, go figure. Like, Teenage Fan Club's Grand Prix is an example. I'd never heard of them, really. I adore that album, and I would have never bought it had it not had a special monster on it. So, go figure. So, that's that part of it, anyway. One other thing that is very weird, and I have been comparing the PlayStation 1 versions to this just to kind of, like, see... Did they change bits of this? It's clear to me that they did upgrade the graphics a little bit for text specifically, because any old text on the screen, like if it's like a certificate that has text on it, it's blurry and fuzzy.
Mm.
The regular text that's in-game is very readable, but there's a weird thing that ended up happening with it where the apostrophes are backwards now, and there's an unnecessary space every time that there's an apostrophe. So it's like where if it's the word that's, it'll be THAT space backwards apostrophe S.
That's weird.
I think that they probably did some sort of an export of the text from one thing, like from the PlayStation thing into like an Excel spreadsheet or something like that. And in doing so, it ended up just screwing that up and they didn't fix that part. That's my guess. Weird.
That's yeah. Hopefully they fixed that.
I would like it if they fixed that, because every time that I see it, it is still a little bit bizarre. Oh, and they had a feature called FF, and I did not know what FF stood for. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go ahead and try it and see if I notice anything. It did not take too long to realize that FF stands for fast forward. So if you are playing the game and it takes a while to do a lot of stuff, like when you're raising the monster, this makes everything like double speed.
Quicken the pace of the game for the impatient people.
Exactly right. But you're getting two entire games. You're getting Monster Rancher 1, you're getting Monster Rancher 2. Monster Rancher 2 even has a remastered soundtrack where it's clear that they like re-recorded the old music. But you can also choose the OG like old music if you prefer it too. And I've been spending so much I've been spending so much time on that I've not talked about the game itself. The idea behind it is that you are going to raise a monster, and then you are going to fight that monster against other monsters, very much like Pokemon. In both cases, this is basically digital dogfighting, which sounds bad, but
that's their purpose. That's what they were born and bred for.
It's not illegal, you know, it's actually, you know... It's encouraged.
That's what children are raised on.
Yes, well, you think that's what Pokemon is too. It's like, I love this monster. I've come to raise it. I've come to, and now I'm going to make it fight to the death.
Fight and murder. Fight and murder for me.
No, I
bloodlust is running through my veins.
Yeah, and there's a lot of fun stuff with it too, because you're gonna, you know, in the first game it's jobs, in the second game it's school, but the concept is the same. In order to make your monster stronger, you're going to have them do tasks, and if they do well at those tasks, then great. If they do badly, you have the opportunity to punish them, and you will be graded as whether or not you're being soft on the animals or whether you're being very strict on the monsters. And so your style will affect it too, because I've noticed if you let your monster get away with a lot, they'll try to get away with more. That's, you know, and it depends. Different types of monsters are easier to raise in that regard. Some of them are a lot more willful, where you'll try to get it to go to a job and it'll say, your monster's kind of tired. Should you let it rest? I said, no, because you were supposed to be going to work. And then that monster decides to rest anyway.
Oh, that lazy bastard.
Exactly. So you have to decide whether or not you're going to punish them. In many cases, you have to decide whether or not you're going to praise them. You got to decide what food you're going to give to them. In the first one, you have potatoes, fish, and meat. Potatoes are very inexpensive, but the monsters tend to not like it. The fish is, you know, average. It costs a little more, but they like it better. And meat's like a special treat that the monsters like. But they changed it in the second game to where there are some monsters that actually love potatoes. So if you happen upon one of the CDs and one of the monsters where they like potatoes, it's going to be a nice cheap monster to raise because, you know, you can keep feeding them the potatoes and they'll be super happy about it. And they also made it to where, like, the schooling, instead of just pass or fail, they have the opportunity to cheat.
Oh, God.
Where they find a way to, where they technically have done the thing, you know, like they've done what they set out to do, but they did it in a way that's cheating. And again, you have to decide whether you're going to discipline them or not. You work your way through the classes. You have the E class, D class, C, B, A, and S. So this is first game that I ever saw that had like that whole E to A and S system. And monsters can die, but you get kind of a warning. Like if it's about time to retire them, then it'll let you know, hey, you know,
It's time to move on.
And if you keep raising them, they may die. But then there's also a chance that if they die, that you might end up getting a ghost monster as a result. Because there's a ghost monster in it too. And not all of the monsters are cutesy either. Some of them are a little terrifying looking. There's a good variety of gameplay in here. The more that you send them off to the school, like the training is what they call it, sometimes they can come back with more skills. So not only are you increasing your stats, but you're increasing the attacks that you are able to use in fights too. And there's a lot here. There's a lot of replayability because, you know, just trying to raise different types of monsters, unlock different types of monsters, because there's some CDs you're going to pop in there and it's going to say, yeah, you aren't qualified to raise this monster yet. Come back when you've grown a bit.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You got to earn that shit.
Dragons are ones you have to earn, for example, in the first game, especially. Like, if you want to raise dragons, you have to earn the ability to do so, which involves taking your monster out on an expedition. Once you reach, I think, C class, you will have a guy that will come by and be like, hey, will you accompany me on this trip to like this desert area? And then you're going with your monster and trying to find special items, and those special items can then help you unlock those. You know, you have to find out, how do I unlock a dragon? Well, it's by trial and error, unless you end up looking up the strategy guide that tells you exactly how.
Cheaters.
Yeah. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that too. I mean, my time is a lot more limited now than it was when I was younger. So I do not, like, it's that thing with Forza Horizon 5. I do not think it's a bad thing for anyone to buy those treasure maps. In my case, I just love the exploration enough that I do not. So.
Well, Monster Rancher is sitting at $29.99, Switch and Steam. What do you think of this one?
Oh, yeah, buy it. I mean, clearly, anyone who grew up with it, especially, buy it. But if you want a Pokemon-style thing that's not Pokemon, just to try it out, I feel like there is more than enough value here. Specifically, if you go on eBay and try to buy the original discs, first of all, good luck. second of all, you're paying a minimum, I was seeing $40 for the disc by itself.
Oh, gee.
Like, and I have a theory as to why. A, these did not sell that well. And B, anyone who did buy it, if you were like me and you were putting a bunch of CDs in your PlayStation, then that disc is getting a lot of wear and tear, because it's put the Monster Rancher disc in, put in your music CD, put the Monster Rancher disc back in, get another CD because you didn't get the monster you wanted, put the Monster Rancher. You get that enough times and there is going to be some serious wear and tear on that. So finding one that's in good shape is even more ridiculous and expensive. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer. You're getting two games that are probably going to cost you $80 by themselves for the discs. And on top of that, you would have to go out and buy all of the music CDs to do this on the PlayStation 1. You have a database where you can just search for it and not pay any additional money. Total no-brainer. If you want to try Monster Rancher, this is a buy it.
Cool beans. All right, well, that is it for this episode. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on and chatting about Monster Rancher 1 and 2 DX.
Thank you.
Quick thanks again to everyone on the PartyCast crew for coming on, and to Will for coming on and chatting about some nude men's volleyball action. It's a fucked up game, folks. That's all I can say about it. It's fucked up. Glenn, do you have any final words to end the show?
Tecmo, contact me so we can beef up your Monster Rancher database.
What's your address? Come on.
Hey, they can find me.
Merry Christmas.